we've seen a human.
You're listening to the News for the Soul Radio Network. Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading edge health information, and much, much more with featured hosts from around the world. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
And we're live. Love and Healing Solutions with Beth and Gil. That's what's happening right now. Their intro show was 2 weeks ago, which you can find on newsforthesoul.com. First official show is today, so let's bring them on to reintroduce themselves, their show, and what's up for today. Beth and Gil, welcome back.
Hey,
yeah, we're glad to be here. Glad to be here. Nicole, what if someone wants to call in during this hour, what number do they need to call?
They call the same number you call. So, and anyone listening, if you don't catch this in time, newsforthesoul.com, it's all there on the Listen Live page. So the number is, pencils ready, 646-595-4274. 646-595-4274.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. We want to make sure, like, during this hour, especially as Beth and I start basically taking on this whole piece called narcissism, which gets a whole lot of questions. Sometimes it gets a bad rap. Everybody gets thrown into the cauldron of that word.
Yeah.
And, you know, in counseling thousands and thousands of people, we've kind of dialed down these seven characteristics or signs of every narcissist, these seven kind of ways that they trick you. You know, there's tricks to get involved into that relationship. They are very well versed in that, and you're not. You're a novice. So if anybody wants to call during this time that has a specific issue with someone in their lives, that's 646-595-4274, call in and say, hey, here's what's going on, and we can at least give you the next step that you need to take. And then if you want to go further than that, you can just, you know, get a hold of Beth at Beth@BestHealingSolutions.com or Gil at BestHealingSolutions.com. Just, you know, email in and say, man, I really want to take care of this. And to be honest, I want to rid this from my life.
Yeah.
Because it is a life killer. It is not the design that God had for any of us where he says, you know what, I've just called you to suffer relationally, so get in there. You know, God's not asking us to get in this boxing ring with someone forever. Typically with narcissists, they're going to knock you out anyway, and they're going to sit there until you get up, and they're going to smack you in the face again. So if you need kind of some encouragement or ways to, you know, we're going to take, you know, this week to really talk some of that through, and probably every other week, you know, we'll do that. Beth's going to be with me in 2 weeks. We're going to talk some about healing, but we're kind of going to go back and forth as we go through the year. On these things. So 646-595-4274 if you've got anything coming up.
Yeah, so we want to talk today, Nicole, really about, and Gil said it briefly, you know, seven signs of every narcissist. Because narcissism is, and Gil said this already, it's a hot topic in our culture, but no one really talks about what to do about it or how to heal it. And there are a lot of people that will seek out, you know, support groups and things like that, but I feel like our ability to help people with this is really spot on based on things we've gone through in our own lives. And then for myself, you know, being in the healing profession for 20 years now and helping a lot of people through relationship pain and how to navigate something like this and actually come out of the other side of stronger instead of torn apart.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting in our culture, we just throw these terms out, right? We'll say things like, man, we label like, man, they've got a massive ego. I'll be honest, most leaders I know have healthy ego. You know, to lead the way they do, they need to be able to take control and see things happen. But there's also a toxic side of ego.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what we'll do is we'll use one term right? Like, oh, man, they're just, or they're cocky. Well, you know, there's a part of cockiness that's actually healthy confidence. It just means they've seeped over into the toxicity piece of it, you know? And so we'll just kind of go back and forth with terms that just throw people, like, into this cauldron called narcissism when maybe right now they just kind of have a percentage of it that's toxic that needs to get dealt with. What we're talking about here is malignant narcissism. This is, you're going to be able to, as a matter of fact, Beth and I were talking, we've been working on this week, and Beth looks at me and goes, man, this is hard because both of us have some of these, you know, and we're looking at each other going, we do. And so the key is to put out there that, okay, here's the area of this confidence I have that I need to grow in. You know, here's that piece that I need help with. And I'm going to say this, narcissist, here's a huge difference. Narcissists never go get help. They don't think they have a problem.
No, never. Yeah.
Whereas healthy people who have seeped into that area go, yike, I need to go get help. That's a huge difference. I remember once with a counselor, I said, hey, do you think I'm narcissistic? And if I am, like if I'm a malignant narcissist, if I am, can you kind of let me know that? And my counselor goes, no narcissist ever asked that question, so I think you're good. You know, on his end, he was going, when narcissists walk in here, they're bringing me their list of victories. They're telling me everybody else's problems.
Yeah, that's true.
Narcissists don't have any in their own minds. So just kind of know that, okay? Like, check your heart. Is it tender? Or are you, like, on a rampage to knock everybody out in your life or to really, to be honest, show people that you're the boss in the room, you're the cock of the walk, you're this amazing, and then you just spend all your time manipulating people via your charisma into a relationship with you that they can then control. That's what narcissists do.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned too, Gil, that's really important, and I'm assuming it's okay that we're just talking right now, is that narcissism, as with all really psychological traits, behaviors, and characteristics, is on a continuum. So I remember, you know, when I was a psychologist before I was a healer, and I guess I'm both, but I remember one of the classes I was taking, and I've heard this from a lot of people, an abnormal psychology class, and the professor said on the first day, at the end of this semester, you're all going to think you have everything that we talked about. You're all going to think you have all of these conditions, and you're going to be freaking out. But remember, everything is on a continuum. So we're talking about, you know, people that are malignant narcissists, and then for those of us that are or have been in a relationship with someone on that continuum at the upper extreme.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about.
As we're talking, we're going to go through these seven. We'll see how far we can get today. But as we're talking, and really seriously, something comes up for you where you're like, I need help with this next step in dealing with a narcissist. You know, 646-595-4274. You know, 646-595-4274. And then, Nicole, just let us know if someone just says, hey, I want to walk this one through. But the first trick that these narcissists utilize is they love bomb you. You know, they love bomb you. And they are just, and can be really charming and charismatic. I mean, then you just go, wow. Like, they walk out of the room and you're like, there's a glow in here that they've left behind. You know, most people on the outside think, like, narcissists are like bullseye for greatness. And so we see their skills and their personalities and how they've wed all of this together. And we think they're amazing. And so we pedestal them right away.
Yep.
They love that. That's their goal.
Yep.
They want to walk away from you where you say, wow, the wow factor is big for them. And so to them, everything is idealized. Everything's idealized. You know, everything they do has to be romanticized as the best. You know, I've done this and I've done that. And man, it's amazing. And they fantasize quickly and they're able to communicate it. And you know, they just, my gosh, if they ask you, like, hey, let's go spend some time together, you know, they might even sit there and look at you and go, can you imagine the kind of kids we'd have together?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like, this is like a Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie connection here. You know, I'm an Adonis and you're like a princess. And can you imagine if our DNA collided? It would be amazing. And you're on your end just going, oh my, that's probably true. And we'll probably end up wedding in the Hamptons, you know, or the Bahamas. Our wedding will be covered by People magazine. I don't know how we'll sleep as the paparazzi will be, you know, around our home every morning in a helicopter wanting to see what we're doing next.
Well, one of the things there with that I've noticed over the years that I think is so abusive and hurtful with narcissists, not just this love bombing, but also when they're love bombing, there's also a way that they will always let you know that you're replaceable. That if you're not in for this picture and how great I am and how great things are going to be and how awesome it is way up here in the clouds, that's okay. You're replaceable.
Yeah.
That's a significant characteristic that I really don't want people to be aware of in your life, and that's a classic narcissistic move. So if you're with someone letting you know that you're replaceable, if you don't have, you know, the same aspirations and the same wonderfulness that they do, be aware that you're dealing with a narcissist, very, very likely.
I love what Beth will say. We'll be talking about somebody that we're dealing with or some sort of, you know, family interaction or whatever. And Beth will say, you know, you can tell when narcissism's in the room because you're a means to an end.
Yep.
And it's to their end. You know, they already have it playing out exactly how this movie's going to go, how it's going to end. You're just kind of auditioning for the part.
You're a pawn. Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is one of the hardest things when you're stuck in a relationship with someone, when you realize that basically you're a dispensable object.
Yep.
Yeah. And on their end, they're going, I don't see what you're talking about. You know, you try to engage them, and they look at you and just deny, deny, deny. So then you're left on your end to go, man, am I crazy? I could have sworn we had that conversation. I could have sworn that person did that. I could have sworn I got caught in that web. And then when I tell the story, they look back at me and go, that didn't happen. And then they have their own narrative. And their narrative usually makes themselves look really good, and you're a nutbag. So,
well, you're only there to serve their needs. And you're a means to an end. Yep, so you are replaceable. You're there to serve their needs only. You're a means to an end. You're a replaceable pawn. You're either wonderful because you fit into this fantasy story of theirs where they are the star, or you stink.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's,
yeah,
that's number one.
Yeah, around here we'll tell people, right, because it's like we're all awesome. I mean, aren't we? We are. I mean, there's so many gifts and talents in a room. There's so much great things that people bring to the table. Mm-hmm. But then there's also massive flaws. I mean, we all have flaws, too. Here's the thing. You're not flawed, period, or awesome, period. You are flawsome. And you want to get used to that. Just saying that, yeah, there I am again, you know, I'm flawsome. You know, I mean, it's just so healthy where the narcissist is just awesome and you're flawed.
Yeah.
So there's not a mixed bag with a narcissist. If you exit out of that relationship, that's fully on you, and they're going to be telling stories to make themselves look like they were awesome in this relationship and you were the one that was flawed, and therefore you did all these things. And for a lot of people that won't get out of narcissistic relationships, is they are so afraid of what's going to be said about them.
Yep, that's true.
Let me just say,
if you extract yourself, which is a term I'm using very intentionally, if you extract yourself from a relationship with a narcissist, just know the punishment does end at some point. With a malignant narcissist, it will end. If you stay in the relationship, the punishment doesn't end ever. So it will end, and we're going to talk about, you know, probably in a couple of times from now, we'll see how this goes today, but about, you know, some also some strategies on what to do specifically. You know, if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, today we want to talk more about, you know, how do you identify a narcissist? Because some of the, like we just said, you know, number one, they love bomb you and describing this whole thing. We want to share all of those aspects because I don't think they're very well known.
Yeah, I think that when the narcissistic piece has you, it's that you've been doing the sick, we call it a sick dance. You've been doing the sick dance. You know, it's not pretty, and you're in it. Not only that, the narcissist goes, you're playing your part really well. And then later you go, I don't like my part, and I think this is really soul-crushing. This is brutal. I don't know if I even want to go on another day, but I certainly don't want to go face-to-face and toe-to-toe with this narcissist because they destroy me every time. I know what I'm going to get. And then you just decide, okay, I'll go back to the dance. So again, 646-594-4274. If you want to call in and just say, man, I'm in that, help me take that next step because I know something's going to happen. And really, Beth is right. I like how she says this. It's going... When you get out, when you say, I'm no longer dancing with you, go find another dance partner, you know, when you leave the dance floor, sure, narcissist is going to look around and just blast you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to blast you.
Okay, they're doing it anyway.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. They might turn it up a couple notches, but they're just going to absolutely put you on blast and take you down in their own verbally assaultive ways. But remember, okay, that will end. That will end. If you can actually have the courage to truly mean when you say, I'm not dancing with you anymore, go find another dance partner, and you walk, you just zip your lip and keep walking. The more resistance you give, you're going to light them up. If they hear from someone that you were at a party talking about them, then that just has, you know what they think? I've still got them. I had a friend of mine a long time ago, they'd use this verbiage that would say like, well, I'm looking for my next victim. Looking for my next victim. And that's what they mean. You know, that's what they mean. So they love bomb you, and there's a lot that goes along with that.
Yeah, the second trait for every narcissist is, and this is where the word comes from, of course, is no empathy. Okay, so they live in an absolute no empathy zone whatsoever. Okay, they're too busy looking at their reflection in the pond to have any empathy for anybody else. So as long as everything is about them, then your life kind of goes okay. As long as everything is about them, their issues. Oh, if they have some, you know, challenge, you're going to hear all about that. If they have a problem or a health problem, you're going to hear all about that. You're going to hear it's all about them, 100%. You're always going to find yourself asking them, how are they doing? How are they doing today? How was their convention? How was their work day? How was their time with their family? How, that's 100% is going to be, how are they doing? You will be genuinely interested in their life, and they will never ask you, well, how was your day? They will never ask you the same questions you ask them. That's another classic sign that you're dealing with a narcissist. Their life is all about them, and dang it, you better make your life about them too. So there is no empathy for whatever you're dealing with. So if you are with a narcissist, just it's fine as long as you don't have any issues. You know, as long as you're a perfect human and you don't have any needs, then I guess it's going to go okay. So there will be no empathy for your situation. There will be no empathy for your relational needs. There will be no understanding that you might need relationship health and help in your relationship with them. Everything's fine. I'll let you know if I have a problem.
Yeah, this is a really, this is a tough one because you're the one on your end. You kind of get sucked into it where you realize that, okay, my role in this play that they have already seen the plot and the ending,
yeah.
my role in this play is to be the person who has the empathy and actually ask questions. It actually has a really good heart to say, how are you? Then one day you wake up and you realize, I was never really asked that. Or if I was, they kind of trailed off in their own mind and you can tell you're not being listened to. You know, the best relationships are, let's find a couch, let's find a bed, let's find somewhere where it's just you and me, and let's connect. That's what's normal. Abnormal is, in this dance, you're the one always asking the questions, you're the one always trying to reel them in, you're the one that's always trying to figure out why they think the way they do, you're the one that's trying to figure out what happened in their past, you're the one that wants to find out what happened at work, you're the one always finding out. You're like a treasure seeker. And they don't see you as treasure. Again, you're a means to an end. So why would they have empathy? And you'll hear it when they're talking about other people. You'll never hear anything like joy and love and peace and those kind of things. What they get an A in when it comes to feelings are anger and rage. They're good at that one. They're really good at that one. But they get an F for compassion. So they're going to nuke everybody and everything around them, including you. And the interesting part about that is that when you finally confront it, they're going to tell you that it's you.
Mm-hmm. You're the problem.
You're the one with the anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're finally going to show it.
Yeah. Now look at you. Whoa, where'd that come from? Wow, I never heard. Whoa. Matter of fact, you might want to go to therapy on that one. Now, that's what they'll say. Whoa, my gosh. Well, there I am. Yep, never saw that coming. And you're over there just going, no, I'm pointing out what I'm seeing to someone I love so that they can change, so that we can finally have high-level connection, a high-touch relationship.
Yeah, they'll send you to therapy. Just wait. If you think there's a problem here, here's the number of a therapist you should call. They'll send you to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, keep that in mind. They'll send you to call us, maybe.
Yeah. They'll even give you the credit card.
Yeah.
Here's the credit card. Believe you me, if you can go get this dealt with.
Yep. Oh, totally.
Then we'll be fine.
That's pretty funny, but also very sad.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're in something like that and you just want to talk a little bit about it, again, 646-594-4274. Just call and check in, and we would love to be here just to help, to help. For you to take that next step. Well, we talked about it a little bit, but this third trick that they play, remember the first trick is they'll love bomb you. The second trick is they live in this no empathy zone.
Yeah.
The third trick is they crash through your boundaries. You know, if you're bold enough, to go to this person and say, hey, I need to put some really clear space into this relationship so that I am not completely sliced and diced like I'm at Benihana. I do not want to be that thing on the grill getting, chewed up. So you come in, you set boundaries with them. They are very upset when you do this. They hate boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
But they will, typically, by the end of that discussion, say, okay. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, you call your friends. I made a major, step toward greatness in this relationship. I'm very special. I'm probably a 0.00001 percenter here because I laid down the law, I set some boundaries, and they said yes. Well, then you make these agreements, and it isn't very long. It could even be in the next hour, maybe the next minute, maybe the next week, maybe the next month. But you make these agreements, and they just absolutely bulldoze them.
Yeah.
You know, they'll just bust right through those boundaries you set, right? And then when you say to them, I thought we had an agreement, here's what they say. They'll go, we did? Like they forget. They'll go, we did? I don't remember that. Or, I know we had that chat that day, but I didn't really agree to all that. So, I'm really not living in this non-integrity place. I actually have a lot of integrity because, man, narcissists think they are the man, they are the best at everything. And so in their mind, it's like, I'm walking in integrity, and really, on your end, you're the one that forgets things, and you don't do this and that. And it's just like, you just kind of go, okay. That's a tough one, but man, this crashing through your boundaries, is an absolute major, major red flag. And Beth and I try to help people when they're dating before they say I do and actually, you know, throw the, you know, if they liked it, they should have put a ring on it, and they did. And now you're in this legal relationship where this person is running rampant right through your boundaries.
Well, you know, yeah, and that's another thing I would say. It's not super related, but we can talk about it more another time, is going into legal battle with a narcissist is worse than getting all your teeth pulled with no anesthesia. Going into a legal battle with a narcissist is not fun. Do whatever you can to avoid that, if possible. Sometimes you can't avoid it, but it's all of this, everything we're talking about on steroids, you know, blown up 1,000% if they're in a conflict with you around something particularly legal, because they're going to do everything they can to try to win and put you down and make you look like a punk to everyone else involved. So, yeah, I agree with you, Gil. It's, the sooner, if you can catch somebody in this act before you hook up legally, yeah, it's a lot better path. It's a lot easier path anyway. To talk a little bit about the boundary crashing, a lot of times with a malignant narcissist, they're going to act like you never made any agreement. They're going to look at you like you have three heads. I never said any of that. They won't probably even say that. They'll act like you never had any agreement and then continue doing whatever it was you talked to them about not doing. They will continue to do, and maybe even more so.
Yeah, one of the things we hear a lot from folks in this, we'll get to this place, right, where they go, oh, my gosh, I'm involved in this, and it's absolutely terrible, and I can't believe I said I do, and I got a bad picker. When we hear things like this all the time.
Yeah.
And usually they'll get close to saying, okay, I'm ready to deal with this. I'm ready to not be their dance partner. I'm ready to walk off that dance floor. And then at the end they'll say, but that's so hard, right? And Beth and I will look at them and say, harder than this?
Right.
Like harder than getting blown up every day? Harder than having to be manipulated on an ongoing basis? Harder than having to hear the verbal abuse, not only to you singularly, but also in public?
Yeah.
Harder than always being the one at fault because you're told you're the weak link in the relationship? It's harder than all that. I mean, maybe in the short term it's going to be a little dicey and it's going to be tough, but don't say, you know, how hard it is and compare it to what you're dealing with, because that's, it will help you compare that. We'll help you say, wow, we've been hearing about this, and now, you know, you're thinking, oh, well, it's going to be tough to walk off that dance floor alone. And just let us remind you over and over that you got to choose your hard.
Sure.
You got to choose your hard, because it's really hard for you to stay. It'll be hard for you to leave, but choose your hard. Choose your hard, okay? Number four, narcissists, there's this great trick in this, right? So there's a triangle out there, and it's called the Cartman Drama Triangle, K-A-R-P-M-A-N, the Cartman Drama Triangle. And that triangle at its ends, each one of those ends, is a hero, a victim, and a villain, okay? And narcissists, man, they are professionals at playing on this triangle. They're professionals. You're not. You know, if you're not a narcissist, you know, you're just like, you're just hit whack. But the narcissist knows exactly what they're doing. And so they are never the villain. You have to understand. They don't play in the villain vortex. They play at the hero piece. They play the victim piece. Both of those. Man, they go, man, we know people, Beth and I, that actually can toggle between hero and victim.
Oh, like, in the same conversation.
In a split second.
Yeah.
And they're going back and forth with it, back and forth with it. So in relationships, they're either the Rock, which is, you know, Dwayne Johnson, they're the Rock, or they're Ross from Friends. You know, remember Ross and Friends? He's always the one that's like, hang dog, you know what happened? Matter of fact, watching that show, it just tears me up. So I'm like, come on, man, grow a set. Like, let's go. But he's just always kind of the victim. And then you know, there's the Rock, right? The one in control, the one who's heroing everybody out of that skyscraper that's burning down. You know, the Rock is in the San Andreas Fault, and I've got to step into a helicopter that's 200 feet above me, but I can jump and catch it. Like, these narcissists play in that role, or woe is me, Ross. You know, so the Rock or they're Ross. And when you confront them, they get super defensive, okay? Really defensive, like, because they got to hold on to Hero, and they got to, you know, they got to hold on to Hero as much as they can. That's their big one. But if they notice they're not getting anywhere with that, they go into victim, and they'll start to cry, or they'll go, oh, my God, you know, can we tell you what all the stuff I've been through? Of course I act like that right now, because, my gosh, my week's been terrible. And they'll go into that, right? And they go on and on with that. And now, both of those, you're the villain.
Always.
Yeah, like, you're the one that's got all the issues, you know? And
well, guess what? Ugh. You're always the villain, and guess who you never are? You're never the hero, and you're never the victim.
Yeah.
So you're right. Constantly stuck as being the villain in that triangle.
Yep.
And then they're either heroing out or crying as a victim or denying what happened happened. So, yeah, you're always stuck in that villain role. And then the unfortunate thing that happens there is you start to believe it. And that's when people usually end up calling for help, is when they realize they're starting to believe that everything their partner has said, that it's all their fault, that they are a nothing, that they're the problem, if only they were a certain another way. And they started to believe it. So they're feeling very unworthy, very worthless, very unsupported. Oftentimes narcissists will make sure to set your life so that you don't have a lot of other friendships, that you don't have a lot of other connections at all. So you're isolated, and you're isolated with them, and now you're a villain. You're not a victim. You're never the hero. You're stuck in the villain role, and you're always the one that's a problem. So you can see why someone in a relationship with a malignant narcissist is in so much pain and in so much trouble. And they really need help. They really need help. And if you know someone that's in a relationship like this, don't forget about them. Don't forget about them. They will become a cover-up artist to protect their narcissistic partner. Don't forget about them. They need you. They need help.
Yeah, a lot of times the victim of a narcissist, a malignant narcissist, actually, I'll just say, they drink a lot of wine. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you're getting with them and you're checking in on them and you're noticing that, man, they are numbing the pain. Very understandable. But because these people are caught in the I am crazy world, they get gaslit so much, and so they have a hard time saying, hey, can I talk to you about this? Because they're not really convinced that they're not always at fault. And so when they get with you, sometimes they're thinking to themselves, well, gosh, I'm going to come across here looking like I'm a victim, and I hate doing that. So it's okay. That's why Beth and I say all the time, like, we can help you through these things because we've been in family situations where we have had to navigate this, and it's been trial and error. And, you know, we talk about it with each other because we've seen it so much, and so, again, if you want to call and check in with us here, 646-594-4274, or, you know, Beth at besthealingsolutions.com or Gil, 1L, G-I-L, at besthealingsolutions.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can email us. You can go to our website, too, and if you want a session, and just get a session request form there.
I understand from, you know, my life before, I would have had a really hard time calling into a show and talking about this one. Because if they found out, that would not go well in terms of punishment. So we understand that, too. And if people are more comfortable, you know, emailing questions and that kind of thing, that's fine. That's fine. We're here for you. we're here for you. And we know this is a really difficult trail to navigate, and there's, you know, specialists in narcissism popping up all over the place. For the person who is a narcissist, there's not as much support for people that are in relationship with one. And so we're here for you on that. And, you know, honestly, if there ever was a narcissist that wanted help, we could help them too.
Yeah.
You never know.
That would be the 0.0001% right there. Narcissists rarely do that, but seriously, sometimes they do. They say, "Hey, this isn't working for me.
Oh,
I notice I'm leaving." I'm leaving relationships in my wake, and to be honest, there's nothing there that's ever been really genuine and authentic. And so,
the truth is that, you know, narcissism is created out of childhood wounding as are most conditions. So we know someone who's a narcissist has had, they cover it up, but they have had a lot of pain somewhere back in their life. This can also be generational with how you're raised. So, you know, we're not here to point fingers at people either. We're just saying if you're in a relationship with a malignant narcissist, you need help, and we're here for you. If you are a malignant narcissist, you're not beyond hope. But like Gil said, very, very uncommon to ask for help, but sometimes life will take them down enough that they might actually crawl for help when they no longer have the use of their limbs, and then we can help them through that. Because all of these conditions are created out of childhood trauma and pain or the way that life was and automatic programming from life. From what you saw, from who your parents were, from who were the important people in your life. So, you know, no one is without hope, and I don't want to give that idea because no one is without hope. But in a relationship with someone who's a malignant narcissist, not interested in changing, growing, seeing anything here that they need help with, that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah, what we want to do is help you with the signs, the tricks that narcissists play, so you're able to go, oh, there that is. You know, like, I can't tell you how many times I've seen someone have the courage on the dance floor as they're doing this sick dance with the narcissist, and they say, I'm not going to be your partner anymore and walk off. I've had narcissists, call, you know, and they'll say this. They'll say, well, if you do that, I'm going to kill myself. You know, if you do that, and then they come up with some sort of thing where they're hoping that you'll just have a tender enough heart to come back in. I had someone tell me once a long time ago in a relationship I was in with her, and there had been a lot of, you know, it's a lot of abuse that I was taking, and finally I'm like, I'm done. I didn't do it well, but at least I stepped up and said, I'm done. And their comment to me was, no, you're not. I'm banking on your tender heart. To stay in. And I looked at her and I said, man, even the most tender heart has its limits. And, of course, I've been the bad guy ever since, and that's okay. You know, it's no fun to hear that, okay, there's still years and years, decade or two later, there's still that deal. Because narcissists, man, you don't leave them. You do that, and it's going to be a big deal. But just remember, on the other side of that can actually be a great relationship, you know, for you when you can find someone. So these are just signs, and I just, you know, we just want to, you know, spot the tricks, spot the tricks.
I want to say something else, too, and I've been working with people with chronic health problems and chronic relationship problems and mental health issues and so on for 20 years, and usually they've tried everything else, and then they show up at my door, which I'm always very happy about, embracing them. I have gotten calls from narcissists whose partners were calling me for help. And, you know, and they threaten me and, you know, make their comments about, you know, you're not helping my partner anyway, you're just taking her money. And, you know, we're fully aware that things like that happen, and that's okay. So just so you know, don't... yeah, if you need help, don't let any concern about that stop you, because I fielded those calls over the years, and they're not fun, but you get used to it. So,
yeah,
I just wanted to throw that in here.
Yeah.
Just with our time, I think we've got a few left here. So if we look at some of the other, you know, classic characteristics that we just want to share with you today, and we've touched on this a little bit, but any problem is always your fault and never theirs. So there will be consistent, constant blame of you for everything that goes wrong, and they will never own any part of it. Even if it's something that is a glaring mistake on their part or an oversight, somehow it will work back through the conversation that it was your fault in some way.
Yeah. People that are in a relationship with narcissists say these two words all the time, and they go like this: I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're the one.
Those are your favorite words.
Those are their, man, you're always the one. You know, you're always the one. And they don't ever look you in the eye and say, I'm sorry. And here's the deal. Like, in our home, Beth and I talked about this. I'm sorrys are only to be followed with changed lives. In other words, sorrys are empty unless there's someone willing to say, man, I see myself in this, and I've got an area that I need to grow in, so I'm going to take care of that. The narcissist doesn't believe they have any area of their life that needs to grow. So if there's a problem in your relationship, guess who's to blame?
Like I said, and then guess who needs therapy?
Yeah, I mean,
you go get that taken care of now.
Yeah, yeah, you get that done, because, man, it's tough to live with you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let me know, you know, when you get back. And if you confront them, they'll say, well, if I ever sense that I have a problem, I'll let you know. That's what narcissists love to say. You know, you're pointing out something and they go, oh, no, you're not qualified to spot anything in me. I'm qualified to spot anything in me. And last I checked, I'm the valedictorian of life. I am number one. I have no issues. And anything that goes wrong is on you or someone else. So problems are always someone else's fault and never theirs. And that's a major trick that you want to be able to see. You want to be able to see that. So that's number five, okay? Four, they play the hero or the victim, never the villain. If you get a chance, look up the Cartman, K-A-R-P-M-A-N, drama triangle, the Cartman drama triangle. There's a lot there to read about, and you can get really good at going, oh, we're on that triangle again. See, most people that narcissists get with, because they want you to be clueless about what it means to do social constructs or personal growth type things. They know that you're kind of a novice, right? But they're not. So they bring that triangle in, they get you on it, and they spin you around, and you are completely knocked, you know, out or knocked silly. And then that's when you're like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. So again, 646-594-4274. Call in if you'd like. And then again, if you want to just touch base with Beth or myself, it's Beth at besthealingsolutions.com or Gil, G-I-L, at besthealingsolutions.com.
Just going to correct you on the phone number there. It's 646-595-4274. And no live callers right now because they're just all listening. No one wants to ask a question on the air. But I just want to let you know we got 7 minutes-ish to the top.
Okay.
All right, 646-595-4274. Sorry, that other number is, you know, you're calling to win the lottery. You know, there's probably, you just bought some lottery tickets. No, 646-595-4274.
The sixth characteristic of a narcissist that we want to talk about, and keep in mind a lot of the, and it could be an unconscious goal of theirs. I'm not saying it's always conscious, but there is at least an unconscious goal that everything they do in relationship with you, they want you to question your own worth and your own sanity. Those are key. So some of the tricks they use, or passive-aggressive skills, I guess, to get what they want, is gaslighting. I think everyone knows what gaslighting is, but if you don't, it is lighting you up. You will start to question your own sanity. You're the one with the mental health problem. You're the one that needs to go get therapy. You're the one that dropped the ball on this. You're the one that needs to get help. You're the one, if I look back at all your relationships, you're the one that's a mess. That is gaslighting, where you walk away thinking you're the one that's nuts.
Yeah, it actually comes from a movie a long time ago where a man was, you know, back in 1938, where a guy, you know, a man was absolutely changing the narrative of his life with this woman in just such a way. He's manipulating it to where all the bad things just looked like it was all from her. And so that's called gaslighting, and their guilt, it's just a guilt and shame piece. They love that. They love that. They love to have you feel
doubt about yourself.
Yes. Yeah. And what best?
Oh my gosh, Gil, I'm amazed. His memory is great. 1938, the British play Gaslight. Okay, and then film adaptations, both titled Gaslight, in 1940 and 1944. Awesome. Yeah. Wow. I'm impressed.
Yeah, so, yeah, I just got a weird memory. So what Beth was talking about, just projecting onto you then their issues. That's the classic gaslighting piece, right?
Oh, yeah, you have an anger problem.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about, me? You know, that narrative gets absolutely just, it skews just enough to have you go, oh, well, maybe it was me. Maybe it was me. I was the one that was angry. I'm the one that has the high anxiety. I'm the one who, you know, didn't do the exact, I'm the one who broke the agreements. You know, I didn't hold up my end of the bargain. Oh my gosh, I'm terrible. And they go, that's right. I had a guy do this with me once on a very long trip from Prescott, Arizona to San Antonio, Texas. And I went with him in his truck there and back. And he was a classic gaslighter. So when I confronted him about his words to me about some things, man, and I work on it, but I was really stern with him, and he looked at me, and he's like, whoa, well, you know, and obviously was a pastor, and so he's like, I didn't know pastors talked like that. I didn't know pastors ever got angry. He just went on and on about that, and I finally was like, well, I'm sorry, right? Think, like, in a way of going, okay, we can both own our part in this. I go, I'm sorry, and he just looked at me and smiled and went, that's right. And then he just kept driving. It was the absolute best. I mean, the worst. So, you know, that was a really big deal there that I remember thinking, yikes, this stuff is real.
Another skill, if you will, of a narcissist is a silent treatment. If you bring up something they don't want to talk about, you will get no response, or you will hear, if you keep talking about that, we're not going to talk for the rest of the day. If you keep talking about that, we're not going to talk for the next year. And you will get the silent treatment until you're quiet. So that's another one. So gaslighting, guilt trips, projection onto you of their issues, and the silent treatment.
Right. So... we're going to close out here. I think we're kind of ready to wrap this up. But the last one, just the last trick that they use, number seven, is they put others down to make themselves look better. And just understand that's an illusion. They're not really getting any better. They're just putting you down enough to where they look higher than you. They want you to be a tiny house compared to their mansion. And the only way to do that is they don't grow themselves. They're not in that kind of game. They're just making sure that you drop down very, very far until they look like a mansion, and you're the one that they just jump in and are saving.
And they put everyone down. So in your discussions, everyone else is an a-hole, and they're great. But they'll talk about neighbors, they'll talk about colleagues, everyone else they put down, including you. But they do that to make themselves look better.
Yep, they do. All right, well, look, we're going to close this out. Again, that phone number is 646-595-4274. We're going to be here every 2 weeks at this time just to give you an hour of information and really to be able to come in and listen in. So I'm going to give you a quick call to action is if you want to get a hold of Beth or myself, it's Beth, B-E-T-H, at Best, B-E-S-T, besthealingsolutions.com or Gil, G-I-L, 1-L, at besthealingsolutions.com. Mm-hmm. Our website is besthealingsolutions.com. We keep it simple around here. Really, if you want a session or two and you want to talk something through and really get to the place where you can make solid decisions in this way and have some support and actually learn the skills to deal with narcissists because they're there, and we're going to talk about those as we go later. But just head to besthealingsolutions.com. There's a session request form there, or you can call our business manager, Tim, 952-232-5298. That's Tim. He's our business manager at Healing Solutions, 952-232-5298, and he is an awesome guy. You'll probably become best friends.
All right.
So that's all we got. That's all we got.
So
Thank you so much for letting us be a part of your life.
Awesome. Great topic. I'll just let you know a couple of the questions coming in just now through email. It should be great for next time. If you're doing a part two, would be how one ends up in that kind of relationship and how one heals. So just putting that out there for part two.
Okay.
Boy, that's right on.
Yeah,
if you can think anything else, let us know. And real quick, I want to make sure, Nicole, that we've got this right. So we've got to get a hold of you. Oh, we're still on here.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So those two, how did I get involved in this? And how? And then how do I heal?
Yes.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Love it.
It was indeed.
Thank you so much.
All the best, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Right.
And happy Father's Day to all the dads out there.
That's right.
Yes.
Love you.
All right. Beth and Gil, Love and Healing Solutions. They're back in 2 weeks. We're back with more right after this quick break.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Seen a human dematerialize more than 1,000 times. It's not a rare phenomena, and the reason that people can dematerialize is because a human body, when it's not in its sort of solid state, is in a hazy wave state, and it's not solid at all, and so that's why people come and dematerialize. So this non-solid being is sitting on a stool, and they're essentially a spirit with a physical body that has all of these geometries and mathematics in them, and as the purple light goes through, like it's really like the Christ consciousness or the Buddhahood or whatever you want to call it. It's difficult to get into terms, but when the light goes through them, it fixes up their geometries and they get better.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
And we're live. Surprise, 10 a.m. Pacific time. We have a surprise for you today. I'm Nicole Marie Whitney. This is News for the Soul. voice going away. Life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Got that covered in full. We're on for several hours today, by the way, so stick around, but we're starting out with something really exciting because he's up to good stuff, and I know Kerry O'Connor and I have been talking about him quite a bit lately, so his ears have probably been burning. Well, it's Stuart Wilde. Anything could have been burning. So he should need no introduction whatsoever. Evolutionary, metaphysical, wild guy, author and leader, and always floating around on the outer limits of the known consciousness of humankind. I don't know how else to describe him. He's here. He's now. Stuart Wilde, welcome back to News for the Soul.
Hi, am I online with you? Because I was on your caller line before.
Yeah, you're totally
you
on the line. With. I can totally hear you.
Cool. Do you think you could sort of like talk for a minute while I call you back on a phone card? Because
okay,
I'm in a really
expensive
hotel, and they're going to charge me $5 a minute, you know?
Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay.
So
well,
can you tell them something interesting, and I'll call you back like within 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, bye-bye now.
Okay. All right. So, interesting. I will tell you about what's going on here. How about that?
first of all, for the next hour, God willing, we'll get Stewie back on here in a second, and we will have our conversation for the next hour with Stuart Wald as to what's going on, because he's suddenly popped up here in Vancouver out of, well, unexpectedly, and he's got some cool things going on, as Carrie O'Connor's been telling us about. She was actually with him in Vegas about 2 weeks ago. This has got to be good. You know it's good if Vegas works its way into the story with Stuart Wald. So we're going to talk about that for the next hour. Then we have open lines. So that's where we're at right now. And then, okay, Stewie's having trouble calling back in. I'm going to go to a commercial, and we'll get Stuart on the line. Hang on.
How would you like to learn how to bend metal with your mind for real? Well, you can. News for the Soul is home to the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, an instantly downloadable digital gift that contains 2 hours of audio and visual instructions designed to get your mind out of the way and teach you how to truly affect solid matter just with your thoughts. Find out once and for all how you are affecting your reality with every thought you think. Don't let anything block you from creating the life that you want. Download the newsforthesoul.com spoon-bending kit today. Just go to newsforthesoul.com right now and click on the bent spoon. That's newsforthesoul.com.
We're still working on getting Stuart back on here. He's having trouble with his calling card. So stand by, Stuart Wild, on News for the Soul, God willing. Okay, let's see if we've got him back on. Stuart,
I wound up in the host queue, and I was going, hello, 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 I didn't get you.
Oh, my gosh, you were hosting your own show.
I'll tell you what was weird. I got a phone card from the 7-Eleven, and when I punched in the code, it said it's an invalid card. So
took
me 5 minutes. Anyway, listen, nice to talk to you. I haven't talked to you for ages and ages and ages, but we did some shows together years ago, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
For going quite a ways back, you know.
The flood.
Yeah, I know. So I've been talking to Carrie O'Connor. Of course, she's a regular weekly guest on News for the Soul, and she's been telling me all about...
Nicole, listen, your voice is breaking up, so I'm only getting little bits of stuff. Are you on a mobile or something?
No, I'm just going to switch my headset. Hang on.
Okay.
I love the technical things these days. Boy, oh boy, it's just constant.
Yeah, no, that's loud and clear now. That's an improvement. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
So you were talking about Carrie O'Connor. Yeah, she's a good friend, and she came over to Ireland for a few weeks, and she got to hang out with me and other people, and it was really, really good. You know, Chris Krebsik of thehoodedsage.com was there and so forth.
Yeah, well, she was saying that you're up to some very interesting things, so I'm just bursting to get the latest Stuart Wild news.
Well,
so
I'll tell you what, okay, here's the story, Morning Glory. I saw this great light come into my hands about maybe 6 months or a year ago, and I could see it with my eyes shut, inner sight, and I could see it with my eyes open, in a normal sight. And then I saw these visions that told me to go and put my hands on people and, you know, offer them a kind of spiritual renewal, a blessing, a healing, you know. So I started trotting around Ireland, and I went to a place, a sacred well called St. Patrick's Well, and then the committee threw me out. They didn't want me there. So I went to other places, and I've been doing healings in Canada and, you know, just various spots. I'm going to go to Italy and do them in Rome at the Vatican. And I posted all on my site, you know, stuartwild.com with a U, S-T-U-A-R-T, so people can follow along if they come. I've done 2,411 so far, so I'm motoring. Yeah.
You are motoring, I know. And I.
Yeah, that's in about 6 weeks or 8 weeks, you know. I haven't started that long ago, you know.
And you were in Vegas.
Yeah, I was in Vegas. I had 705 people. And I did a short healing on all of them, and then I did a much longer healing. So I kind of did 1,410 healings there.
Yeah. So tell me about the healing itself. What is it? What's going on?
Well, what it is, well, I have to back up and tell you something else. Like 2.5 years ago, I saw this light. I was in Vancouver, actually, on the water, an apartment on the water, facing Granville Island. And I saw this light appear in the room, and it was strobing all around the room. It looked like an oval football. And it was going ping, 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 ping. And it was there for like 5 hours. And I saw the Christ consciousness and the solar logos and hosts of angels, many things, you know. And at the end of that series of visions, and there were 4 other people in the room, they saw it as well. I got stigmata through my hands and my feet. And it's the sensation of nails or skewers going through your skin. It's extraordinarily painful. And it's been raging for like 2.5 years. It's eased off a little bit now, but it's still going. And it was really, really strange. You know, I really didn't know what was happening, but I was very calm and composed, and I saw visions and stuff that helped me. And it was after the sort of pain of this stigmata thing for 2.5 years that the light came into my hands. So it wasn't sort of like imagined or, hold on a second. I don't know how to operate this bloody system. Hold on a second. Oh, God. If I cut you off, I don't dare cut you off. Can you hear that phone ringing?
I can hear, but you know what? That's good.
Just let it ring. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I haven't got a clue. I haven't got a clue how to operate these things.
We don't want to lose you now. It's just
no, I'm totally technologically challenged. I mean, I can't work a toaster, you know. anyway, it was after the stigmata came and went. I mean, it went day and night for 24/7. And sometimes it was so excruciating, I'd have to lie on my bed and sort of meditate my way through it for an hour. Anyway, then after all of that, the light came. And essentially, it's a purple light, and it goes inside people, and it changes their fractal codes. It changes their geometries and the mathematics of their body, because humans are essentially lots and lots of little boxes, like pixels on a photograph, and those boxes contain codes like geometries and mathematics and tubes, you know? And so this light goes through the person, and where there's black, let's say, because they have some dysfunction in their body, it changes the code from black to purple, and they get better. And I've done healings on leukemia and brain tumors and asthma and autism, gout. I published on my site a few days ago, and 25 other diseases. But when I'm working on them, I don't know necessarily what's wrong with them. They may be troubled, psychiatrically troubled. I got one guy out of an insane asylum, and he called me from the asylum, and I told him what to tell the doctors to call him into letting him out, and he did that, and they let him go. And then he came to Ireland, and he stayed with me, and I did a healing on him. I mean, he was absolutely demonically possessed. He was completely round the bend, and he was cured, and he went off to Switzerland and got a lovely job at $120,000 a year.
Well, you have been busy.
Yeah.
So why is this happening, first of all?
Well, my old teacher said 40 years ago that when this great darkness falls upon the world, because he knew all about the fascists and all this stuff that's going on now with, you know, the arrest without trial and wars and all that stuff. He said when all that darkness comes around, which it has to come around because the human shadow has to come out and people have to see how ugly it is. He said that when the shadow and this darkness falls upon the earth, that the eternal Tao and the feminine spirit would come back to earth. And as to compensate for the darkness. And so I think that why now is because the world is going ever more degraded and ever more, you know, broken down. And it's just being ruled by these sort of fascists that are not even American. I mean, they come from another place. Are you there, Nicole?
I'm here. Are
you
there?
You have to say something now, like, well, that's jolly boring shit, or something like that. I don't know what. Say whatever you want to say.
Well, you know, hasn't the darkness always been here? We're just seeing it now? I mean, do you mean the fall?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly here during the war and stuff like that with Hitler. And
before, in the Dark Ages,
before.
I would think it was here.
Yeah. But for some reason, we're approaching the end time, and so this is a sort of final phase, a recapitulation of evil, and then a recapitulation of the Christ consciousness, the solar logos, and goodness. And the solar logos is essentially a celestial light, and I was watching it like a couple of years ago, and I saw it coming into land, you know, and when it landed, I translated it into this massive electrical transformer that was the size of like a small house. But essentially that light is here now, and the Christ consciousness is in there, and the Buddhahood, and the light of the, you know, the gods and the angels and the feminine spirit and Gaia, it's all there inside this solar logos. And so it landed, and now we get the benefit from it.
All right. So did this light or this vision, did it just come to you?
No, other people have seen it, like many have seen it. And sometimes they write emails and explain what they've seen and so forth. And Chris Krepsik, the HoodedSage.com, he writes about it. And it's a common thing. I mean, there's many visionaries and psychics and teachers that can see that light now. You know, it's common to all of us. It's not an exclusive anything, you know?
So what do you, are other people doing healings with it?
That I don't know about. That I don't know about. I've got no idea, because there was a doctor that came to me, and I held his hands for 20 minutes, and then he went off and did healings, and he cured a lady of multiple sclerosis by just putting his hands upon her. And she went off to the hospital, and she had a scan, and the lesions in her brain weren't there anymore. So I have transferred it to two people by just holding their hands, and the doctor was the most spectacular transfer. But yeah, there's no exclusive anything, you know. I mean, it's like, it's the Christ consciousness. It's everywhere, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you know, Carrie came on and she said that she was blown away because you cured something in her head or something the first time that she got together with you. So she's been going on about it ever since.
Well, and she had something in her hand that was becoming infected, and she would have had to go to the hospital for antibiotic injections. And
yeah,
after the healing, it wasn't there anymore. And so she was happy. Carrie was, yeah.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, it's miracles, but it's not really miracles, because it's mathematics, it's geometry. So the purple geometries and the purple mathematics go through the person's body in the space of a few minutes, and it just changes the geometry of the septic finger, or it changes the geometry of the leukemia or the cancer or whatever else is, you know? So all of those things,
wow,
have a geometry. They have a fractal code, like the Mandelbrot set. It's all a series of geometries and fractals. We're not solid beings. You know, I've seen a human dematerialize completely, myself and others. We've seen a human dematerialize more than 1,000 times. It's not a rare phenomena. And the reason that people can dematerialize is because a human body, when it's not in its sort of solid state, is in a wavy, hazy wave state, and it's not solid. It's not solid at all. And so that's why people come and dematerialize. So this non-solid being is sitting on a stool, and they're essentially a spirit with a physical body that has all of these geometries and mathematics in them. And as the purple light goes through them, like, it's really like the Christ consciousness or the Buddhahood or whatever you want to call it, it's difficult to get into terms, but when the light goes through them, it fixes up their geometries and they get better.
So I know you were having events where you were trying to train people to see that dematerialization for a while. Were people able to see it?
Yeah. That's why there's 1,000, you know, that's why we've seen it for 1,000 times, because 200 of us have seen it 5 times each, let's say, you know.
How do we see it without being able to train with you personally? How do I see someone dematerialize?
Well, I can't guarantee that somebody that hasn't trained with me can see it, because I don't know where they're at and what they believe and, you know, how balanced they are and so forth. But the inner sight comes from softness. It comes from kindness and calm. And it comes from the trance state. So you have got to be able to meditate and hold the sort of theta trance state for cycles a second. And then those inner worlds open up. But they only open up as much as you open up. And they only open up as much as you can purify your life, you know. So the inner sight is usually denied to people that are sort of unprocessed and that haven't worked upon themselves and their shadow, and they haven't developed that kind of generosity and charity and kindness in their soul. You know, you have to have a good soul to see.
So you're getting all of these, you've got this light coming to you, you're being guided to travel around. Have you had many visions as to, you know, where things are at and where they're going in this transitional time?
Well, I've seen lots and lots of sort of visions of the destruction of Jerusalem and so forth. And I've seen visions of the collapse of the stock exchange and the sort of American political system and so forth. So we're living in a precarious time, because things could go belly up at any time. I mean, right now the stock exchange is sort of being pumped by the Federal Reserve, and they're sort of,
yeah,
pumping it up no matter what the news is. But once the election's over, it could easily come down. And then again, if there was a massive earthquake tomorrow somewhere like California, or if a meteor hit New York, you could see the stock exchange collapse overnight. So we're in an age where the shadow's coming out, the goodness is building to compensate for the shadow, and then the systems of 3D, like Wall Street and so on, that's so like corrupt and manipulated, those systems eventually fall apart because everything has to return to a sort of order, a beauty. You know, it's like Gaia, the spirit of the earth, is here to restore the natural balance of things.
So you're still seeing that sort of process going on. What on the other end of the scale, with this light coming in and other stuff on that end of the scale, what are you seeing for the future?
Well, you don't get to see, like, you know, 10 and 20 and 30 years ahead, but I don't believe that the world will end in 2012, you know? The Mayan culture was extraordinarily rinky-dink. I mean, I don't know if people know that, but it sort of covered just maybe 1,000 miles of Central America. And they were very cruel. They were black magicians, and they had these blood sacrifices and tens of thousands of slaves, and they would chop people's heads off at the top of the pyramids and roll them down the hill. And what happened to the Mayans was that in the end, the slaves rose up, and they slaughtered the kings and the priests and the aristocracy, and they stole the gold and returned back to their families in the forest from where they were originally captured. So the Mayans couldn't really foretell their own demise, and they couldn't foretell that, like, karma would find them and they'd all be rubbed out. And the fact that their calendar ends in December 2012 is, like, completely irrelevant. So I've seen visions of 2016, so we're definitely going to get past 2012.
Well, we're on the same page there, that's for sure. I love that. Rinky-dink. There you go.
Yeah.
But what is your most immediate communication? I mean, you're being guided to go to all these places. You're going to the Vatican. When's that happening? And how do you think that's going to go?
I'm doing healings in Italy, in Turin, on October the 14th, and I'm in Volterra on October the 16th. And I'm just waiting to confirm with a contact of mine in Rome. So I would say October the 18th I'll be in Rome, right there in front of the Vatican where the obelisk is.
And
I've seen loads of visions of the collapse of the Catholic Church and its rebirth, its reconstitution. Once all the pedophiles and the black magicians are tossed out, it'll become new. There'll be a new pope, and it'll come clean in the end, you know, because it is a great inspiration for many religious people, albeit the dogma and all of that is very simplistic, but it's what they believe and it helps them. But we need to clean the gaff up, you know. We need sort of Schwarzenegger to go around and clean house.
Oh, I'd pay money to see that.
Yeah.
So what's happening here in Vancouver then? It was on the 20th, right?
Yeah, I've got some healings on the 20th. I only send it out to the Stuart Wilde A-list people because I've got so many readers in Vancouver and so many people know me here that I was scared of getting swamped. And I could do about 80 healings in 2 hours. And I didn't want 500 people coming, so I didn't post it to my site. Now, it's faintly possible, and I have pre-booked the rooms that I've had to rent for Saturday afternoon. And if I go ahead with Saturday, I will post it on my stuartwild.com site Thursday night. But the Thursday healings are just for the people that I'm emailed on the A-list because I was scared, man. I was scared 500 people were going to show up, you know?
Totally could happen, yes.
Which could easily happen. And I just don't want to disappoint people, and I don't want them getting angry, and I don't want them jostling and fighting each other. And, you know, there's only a limit to how many I can do. When I do the healings, I usually do 2 hours because when I put my hands on people, I have to concentrate ferociously. If I have any slight, you know, interruption in my mind, I have to start again. So if I'm doing a healing and I suddenly think, oh, my God, did I leave the iron on? I have to start again. So then to concentrate, you know, on 80 people for 2 hours is quite a sort of effort. And I find that at the end of the 2 hours, I'm really fried and I can't really go on much past that. I can sometimes take a half-hour break and then do one more hour, but I'm limited to how many I can do at any one time.
This is the first time you've been guided to do healings, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to do some in the past, but they were all like more people with psychological problems or people that were demonically possessed. I've done like about 40 or 50 exorcisms. And essentially, I put my hand on the person, and I scare the ghouls and the devils out of them. And that's how I do my exorcisms. It's dead easy, really. It's like baseball backcountry, you know? So, yeah, this is the first time that I've been sort of shown, you know, the healing thing. But again, it came from the stigmata. And when I tell people, hey, I've got stigmata, they look at me really blank and start twiddling with their dress, you know, looking up to the sky. They don't really know what I'm talking about. But it's the sensation of nails going through your hands and your feet.
Why do you think it would come through for you in that kind of way? I mean,
oh, look, I've asked that why me question, and it's kind of irrelevant, really, because, you know, it's like, and, you know, why did it go to Padre Pio? I don't know. I mean, perhaps, I don't know. There was reasons for it. There must be some sort of higher reason, but mainly it's because I can handle the pain, and I'm willing to go out and do the work afterwards. So I would say that those were the two main reasons.
Huh.
Because somebody else, if they got it, they'd panic, you know, and they'd be in hospital, and doctors would say, we don't know what's wrong with you, and they would go into sort of a psychological, psychiatric mess with that kind of pain going day and night. So I think because I can handle the pain and because of meditation and trance and so forth, that's why I got it, you know. But I don't have any other reasons. I mean, I wasn't shown any particular reason.
That's actually very true, isn't it? I mean, we would have a quote-unquote normal reaction if we weren't, you know, really prepared. And your health is good?
Yeah, yeah, I'm very strong. I've got a lot of stamina, you know, so I'm okay.
Hmm. Are you able to heal yourself when things come up, or if they
always,
should come
always.
Up?
Always, yeah, always, every time. Yeah, if I have, let's say, I don't know, a pain in the gut or something, I just mentally put my hand inside my body, and I say a couple of little sort of prayers. Because when I do the healings, Nicole, I watch for these purple hands to come up, like a vision of a purple hand, you know? And I watch for them to come up 9 times. So when I'm touching somebody on the shoulders, I watch for those visions to come up, the purple hands. They come up. Once they've come up 9 times, the healing's over. So that can be like in 15 seconds, they can come up 9 times. But then I go on and I do some protection prayers and stuff as well, you know, beyond the actual healing. But yeah, I can sort of do the healings in 15 seconds. And then when I have a problem, like I had a sort of indigestion pain across the top of my chest a few days ago, I just put my hand inside my own body and I pull it out and that's it.
So how much is it driven behind your own intentions and attention, and how much is coming through you from somewhere else?
Well, I don't know. I can't sort of be particularly accurate on that. I don't know. But I don't charge for the healings that I do, and I do not accept donations. So there's no sort of ulterior motive on the financial front. So I've done 2,411 healings free of charge. I don't charge people. Now, when people come to a gig and there's a big hotel and the promoters are paying $10,000 a day, they have to charge people to provide the space.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different thing. But the street healings and all the other healings I've done, I've never charged anybody ever. And I never will. I'm just not allowed to charge, and I don't want to charge, because I don't want a person sitting on the stool thinking, how much money have I got to give this git? And will a tenor do, or should I give them $50? You know, I don't want them thinking like that. I want them to concentrate on their salvation, their redemption. I call it the spiritual healing, the second chance. And it's like, hey, you know, do you want to be absolved, and do you want absolution for your illnesses and your, you know, disquiet and your pain? Because here it is, and it isn't going to cost you anything. So what's my intention? Well, my intention actually is to flee to the pub and not come back. So because it's a lot of hard work. It's expensive flying around and driving around to the various locations. And but there's a sort of love in it. There's a kindness, and you sort of want to try to sort of be kind to people because I have a compassion for their disquiet, their energy, and their disease. So I'm kind of honored to help them. But there's no real ulterior motive in it for me, other than the energy heals me when I'm working with it. So there's a defined benefit there.
So were you guided and told it had to be free?
Well, it wasn't as if like some, you know, angel with flappy wings came down and said, make it free. It's just instinctively I felt like, hey, I didn't pay for these hands. I didn't pay for this light. I just got this light from the solar locus. It was given to me after a certain couple of processes I had to go through. And it's not fair that I charge people for it, because I never paid for it in the first place, you know? And, you know, with the economy being as it is, I mean, how much can you charge a person? Okay, let's say they've got leukemia, right? I met a bloke in a pub that had leukemia, and I did a healing on him, and he was cured. And he went to the hospital, and they said his leukemia was non-detectable. They couldn't find it. Okay, when he's sitting there on a stool, he doesn't know who the hell I am. How much is he going to donate? Like $5, $10? What's, you know, leukemia worth, you know? And then later on, perhaps after he was healed from leukemia, he might want to donate, I don't know, $100 or $10,000. But I just don't want people getting into all that mess. You know, here's the light. It's free of charge. I got it for free of charge, and you can have it for nothing.
So how long do you think you're going to be traveling around doing these healings?
Oh, I don't know. It could be 5 or 10 years, you know.
Wow. Because I know you particularly are not a big fan of air travel.
Well, only because, you know, I've been like 62 times around the world, the equivalent thereof, and I've been to 61 countries. And, you know, when you have to go through the airports and the security and all that stuff and the pat-downs and stuff, one guy put his hand down with trousers, you know, at the airport, one of those TSA guys. And I said to him, I said, look, sir, any more of that, I'm going to have to charge your entertainment tax. Now, will you knock it off? You got your hand down my bloody trousers. You're not allowed to touch me, will you? Now, F off and leave me alone. You know? So that stuff's, you know, very disturbing. And if I was a wealthy man, which I'm not, I'd have my own little plane and I would zoom around. But, yeah, I'm not a fan of air travel. I think it's very degrading. But, hey, how are you going to get to these various places, you know? I can heal radiation in people, Nicole. So I was thinking of going to Japan.
I was just going to say, is that on your travel plans then, Japan?
Well, I'm thinking about it. I mean, I don't know anything about Japan, and I don't even know if I have any... I know I've got Japanese readers, but I'm not really linked into people in Japan. But when people come to the healings, I test them with a Geiger counter, and we just run it across the front of their body. And we get these readings off of them for their, you know, the amount of radiation they're giving off. And on our Geiger counter system, about 30 to 40 clicks is normal, and past 60 is abnormal. So this lady came along, and she was German, and she had a reading of about 66. And I did a healing on her, and then I retested her, and she was down to 45. And then a young boy came to see me in Cranbrook, B.C., and he had a reading over 60, and again, he went down to like 38, 40, something like that after the healing. So somehow this purple light, the fractal codes, goes through the body and removes some of the radiation and restores the person back to normal. So yeah, I might go to Japan. I don't know. It's difficult. I don't really know any people there, you know?
Well, I'm sure someone's listening. We have listeners there in Japan. And
yeah.
Who knows? Is there a guidance coming through with this purple light? I know there's no flappy wing angel, but I just keep getting pulled back there.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes, there's a guidance in the sense that I see these visions, and a lot of them are quite technical, and quite a lot of them are technological, you know, they're complex mathematics to try to understand. It's not like I have to necessarily clunk the numbers, but I've got to understand what the pictures mean, and a mathematical formula or a geometric pattern is a code, so you have to understand what it's actually saying. And so, yes, there is a guidance trickling through, but there isn't a sort of spirit guide or Jesus or, you know, Kut Humi or Bongo Dongo, the famous Tibetan. They're nothing. No, it's just information. So I sit there, and sometimes I pray, of course, you know, and ask questions, but essentially I'm praying to the four walls. So I'm going, hello, walls. Now, how do you feel about healings in Zambia next week, you know, whatever? And then the information comes flying in. So essentially, it's information that it may come from some, I don't know, highfalutin spiritual place, but it doesn't seem like that to me. It just seems like visions that I see that emanate from my higher self.
Mm-hmm. Which is
so
probably
I've got the same thing. I'm sorry, Nicole?
Which is probably exactly the same thing, just semantics and different ways of seeing it, right?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's not like, I mean, I've seen hundreds of visions of Jesus. I mean, I saw one 3 days ago. And sometimes he's doing strange things. Like I posted on my site that I saw a vision of Jesus with a pig. And a pig is a symbol of the end time. Because when we see an apparition in the sky of an upside-down pig, that's the end. So with him having the pig under his arm was a way of saying that he's a custodian of the end. But it says in Revelations that he's Alpha and Omega. He's the beginning and the end. But it was a reassuring vision to think, well, it's all going to be all right.
Wow.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul highlights. Life-changing spotlight she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Yeah, did I answer your question or did I just ramble around it? I can't quite figure it out.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Are you still writing?
Yes, I am, yeah. At the moment, I'm working on an upgrade of a book I wrote in the mid-90s called God's Gladiators.
Ah.
And it wasn't It wasn't published by my publishers, Hay House or Random House or any of the other publishers that I've had contracts with, because the book was quite controversial. But so it was published by a very small American publishing company. A man called Mark Ellis published it, and now I'm going to do a sort of an upgraded version and publish that. So I'm going to renew that book, because it was actually, other than Plum Red, which is my latest book, it was the best book I ever wrote, God's Gladiators.
It was intriguing indeed. I remember speaking to you. That's the one you wrote in a remarkably short time, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw this being that appeared at the end of my sofa in Australia, and she had this digital fractal golden eye with sort of golden circuitry in her eyes, and she showed me the destruction of Jerusalem and several other visions. And then I got this feeling that she wanted me to write a book, and so I started the book at 11 o'clock on Sunday night, and I wrote it and finished it at 5 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, less than 4 days. And that was it. I wrote for 23 hours a day, and then I would have a steam bath and a cup of coffee and an egg sandwich, and I'd meditate for 20 minutes, and then I'd write for 23 hours again. So I wrote the book in 4 days, more or less nonstop, with 4 hours rest.
Steam bath and an egg sandwich.
That's it. Steam bath,
wow.
Egg sandwich, and a cup of coffee. Yeah.
That is amazing. Wow. Okay, so when that revised version going to be ready for us?
Well, it'll be done in a week or two, and then it has to go to the printer. I mean, before Christmas we should have it, you know? And then I'm thinking of about one more book. I mean, I've just bought out a book called Plum Red, which people say is very beautiful. I mean, it's not for me to say it's beautiful, but people say it's very beautiful. And it's sort of spiritual teachings presented as stories from the time of, like, 250 to 500 BC. And it's stories of the Taoist sages, and one particular order of Taoist sages that were known as the sages of the plum red robes. And so that's why the book's called Plum Red. But it's not in the shops at the moment, because we're having difficulty getting distribution and so forth. But if people click it, they'll find it. We have another site called thesacredtearsofgaia.com, and they can buy it mail order from there.
Excellent. I just want to remind people, because I'm getting 8 million emails here, it's all on linked up on our homepage, newsforthesoul.com. You've been here a while, off and on, over the years. Many times we've talked, intriguing conversations, many, many times. And you know, I got to say, I think you're one of my favorite human beings.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
How long are you in Vancouver for?
Oh, I've been here for 3 weeks, on and off, and I've been around to Cologne. I did a bunch of healings in Cologne and Cranbrook and so forth. So I'll probably be here like a week, 10 days more, and then I have to flee because I've got to go work. Got to go to work.
Oh, it's so love to be able to get together with you while you're in town.
Call Ryan for the phone number, because I don't want to get you over
there.
Okay.
No,
right,
of course.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. You'd have a lot of calls. But that would be great if we can connect, and I'd love to experience.
Yeah, we can. If we can't do it this time, I'll be coming back. So we'll do it next time. I'm sure within a month or two I'll be back here, because there's so much stuff going on here at this time, you know? And
yeah.
I'd like to do healings in Victoria Island. Is that what it's called? No, what's it called? Vancouver Island, isn't it? Yeah.
Vancouver Island, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Very nice.
And,
do you get drawn where the healings are needed most?
I think there is some inner system that draws me to places, but I'm not aware of it, you know?
Very interesting. Well,
I mean, I might get an impulse. For example, I had this impulse to do some healings in London, in Battersea Park, where the Golden Buddha is. And I typed it out, and suddenly it disappeared from the software. It wasn't there. So I had a little bit of a sort of irritation and a slight, you know, threw me dolls out the pram and put the bloody thing back in again. And it blipped out a second time. And then I thought, right, one more time, this is it, it cannot possibly blip out. And the third time I put London and the details, it blipped out a third time. So I decided I'm not supposed to do London, not at the moment anyway. So for the software to suddenly just accidentally blip itself out, and it was
yeah.
an article on Irish healings and Italian healings and so forth. It wasn't like the whole article disappeared, just those couple of sentences that referred to London, and they disappeared three times. So yeah, maybe there is a guiding system that goes delete delete. I don't know, but I don't want it to make it sound like, I don't want to make it sound, Nicole, like there's any specialness involved. You know, the light is for everybody, and yes, I've garnered this light in my hands because of the stigmata, but, and so what? You know, who cares, you know? It's only a matter of whether the lady sitting on the stool is going to be cured of her pains, you know, or the gentlemen. That's all that matters. It's all about the humans and their pain. It's nothing to do with anything else, you know.
Well, I would just so love to experience this light and be able to tell everyone, you know, what's going on from a different perspective. And let's get together when we can, Stuart.
Yeah, well, look, if you want to come to the healings tomorrow, call Ryan and he'll give you the address. He's going to have to ask me for it, but if I get an email from him asking me for the address, then come along. It's 12:30 to 3:30.
Okay. All right.
Tomorrow.
Sounds like a date.
Near where we met before, you know? Okay?
Yes, I got it.
All
okay,
right,
perfect.
Yeah.
I feel very surreptitious.
Well,
it is a pleasure as always, and keep us in the loop.
Yeah, I don't want to deny people, but I'm so terrified. You know, like one day 5,000 people are going to rock up. You know, I'm
That's
just
right.
terrified of 500 people rocking up because I can only do 80 in 2 hours. Now, I don't know, if I see some visions that allow me to sort of zip through 500 people pinging them, then I could up my quota. But at the moment, I'm limited to this sort of hands-on. Well, I do people two at a time, and they take sort of a couple of minutes each because, you know, I use one hand with one person and one hand on the other person's shoulder. And doing that, I could do 40 an hour, 80 in 2 hours, and that's it, you know.
That's it. Cool.
That's
well,
it, man.
I will try to be there, and I so appreciate you being here today, Stuart. It's always a great pleasure.
Thank you very much.
StuartWild.com will keep you posted on and keep us in the loop as things evolve.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I write my blog every day, and there's 2 or 3 articles every day, and some of them are teaching articles, and some are sort of things on lucid dreams, and today I posted a funny one about the Mormons and their underpants. Well, you know the Mormons believe they have magical underpants, and I did a Mormon magical underpants story.
I literally never know what you're going to say next. I love that.
Well, the thing is, I like to write humor into my stuff because some people take spirituality and the journey and metaphysics and religion, they take it really seriously, and there's nothing serious, you know? God's
mm-hmm.
a comedian, you know? She's very funny.
You have to have a sense of humor.
Yeah, you'd have to have a sense of humor to be God, wouldn't you? So, yeah, no, she's a funny person. And so I just want it all to be light and breezy and normal. You know, spirituality is the act of becoming ever more normal. That's what it is. It's becoming natural and returning to Gaia and your nature self and the normality of things rather than, you know, wandering around with a diaper on your head clanking a bell. Not to say that that's wrong, but it's all a bit over the top, do you see?
It is.
It's a thing that you have to evolve through eventually. One day you look at the diaper and you think, this is absolutely silly. Why is this on my head and why am I clanking a bell? And you go to the pub instead.
There you go. Stuart Wild. In
God
a nutshell.
Bless.
Thanks, Stuart.
Yeah,
take
bye-bye
care.
Now.
We'll see you soon. All right, stick around. We're just getting started today. That was, by the way, if you missed the intro, Stuart Wild, StuartWild.com, the one and only. And more on that to come.
You're now tuned in to Nicole Whitney's News for the Soul highlights, life-changing spotlights she has shared with leading teachers in the human consciousness field since 1997. Go now to newsforthesoul.com to hear the full shows totally free. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel Brinkley.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We know that we choose to come to this world, and we're chosen to come to this world, and we've come for breath. We breathe in for ourselves and out for spiritual unfoldment. And as we breathe these moments, let's open up our heart and open up our souls, and let the true awareness of News for the Soul make its impact now and forever.
I'm kind of having my own 2012, Nicole. There's a real energetic change going on, and a whole new era of my life is opening up, and I've waited for this for a long time. When you have one after the other, it's like, all right, bring them on, whatever, because they ain't going to stop me. You know, I ain't going to be stopped, so throw everything you like, you know, and it don't matter, you know. Some of these scientists, the ones that understand that the carbon dioxide causes global warming scam is a nonsense, they are utterly incredulous at how obvious it is what the real cause of global warming is while it's being completely ignored. It's on that lie, provably so, that all these new laws, taxations, changes, impositions are being justified. We ain't seeing anything yet. I'm not having it. I am not showing up. I will not shut up. And if what I'm saying is true, why should I? No matter what people say about you. It doesn't matter. It's an illusion.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Icke. Well, it's been a while since we've talked. And
well, I've been in my bunker, mate. You know what I mean? I've been in my bunker using this new book.
Well, I want to find out about the new book, obviously,
okay.
And a little bit about filling in the blanks. I've had people writing me over the last year and a half going, is David okay? Is everything going all right? And so, you know, we want to address that. So
all right.
Why don't we start there before we get to the book and the new stuff?
Okay.
As far as how are you?
I'm very good. I'm going through great changes in my life at the moment, and they're manifestations of energetic changes. Where I mean, I've been going through another transformation, if you like, over the last kind of year, but it's getting stronger and stronger. I'm kind of having my own 2012, Nicole, I think. There's a real energetic change going on, and a whole new era of my life is opening up, and I've waited for this for a long time, because the last phase, which I guess began around 10 years ago, has been real, real tough, and it's something that's been very difficult to get through sometimes, despite producing all the books. You know, it's been my most creative period of my life, but it's been a real challenge in many ways, and the challenges continue, but you know, life is about not so much challenges, but the point from which we observe them. You know, you can look at the same thing, and one person sees it completely different to the other, and one goes through emotional trauma as a result of their point of observation of this situation, and someone else, it don't matter. You know, just get on with your life. It's not the problem you think it is. And I tell you what I've started to do as this energetic change has proceeded and got more and more powerful, is that I've taken a different point of observation to everything, and it really, really does not help put this illusory, nonsensical crap into perspective. I was listening to some interviews with near-death experiences a few weeks ago, and there was tremendous common themes there in terms of what they experienced. But I remember one who said the moment he left the body, there was no past, present, or future. He knew what people were thinking about him. He knew what people had thought about him. He knew what people were going to think about him. There was no sequence. There was no time. There was no space. Everything happened in one now. And, of course, the perspective of this reality while he was encased in the computer, the body that filters reality so that we only experience a small, small, tiny band of infinite possibility. His perspective of that from where he was just dramatically different. Of course it was so many things that mattered. Oh my goodness, he's so important. Oh my goodness, mate, it's so stable. Oh my God. Well, chill out. It's all an illusion. So I'm more and more putting my point of observation there of this world rather than my point of observation being how you're supposed to, in emotional and mental terms, react to certain things. Another thing that I do, it makes people sometimes difficult to understand why I do certain things, is the point of the whole thing that I'm doing is to put before people information and understandings that will allow them to have another view of reality. Don't mean they have to believe it, but at least it will be put before them. And at the end of my life, the end of this illusory experience, how I will look back from that point of view where that near-death experience I was will be very different to the way that people would perceive life as they live it as they go through. And what I mean by that is I will be saying to myself, did I do what I set out to achieve? Did I do as much as I possibly could? And if the answer to that is yes, then, you know, I'll feel good. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'm pleased about that. But what tends to happen is we get caught in irrelevances and diversions, and we get pulled from that absolute focus. This is what I've come to achieve, and this is what I'm going to do, and this is going to take my priority. Things that some would think were important in terms of, I don't know, relationships, whatever, to me, they're just part of the illusory journey. And okay, you learn from them and you can enjoy them or not enjoy them or whatever, but the focus of my life is first and foremost to put before people information that they don't normally receive. Because when we view this world and we look back from that vastness of perspective comparatively, it's not, did you say the right thing to this person? Did you go to the right place here? All that stuff from the five sense point of view. It's, are people in that five sense reality in an Orwellian state? Are their children being microchipped at birth? Are they being completely disconnected from their infinite multidimensional self? Or has a contribution been made to stop that happening so that people can experience this reality, and it's just a reality and we can experience it and, you know, have a good time, but in freedom of thought, in freedom of action, in freedom of living your perspective, rather than being born into an Orwellian world of machine-like control. That's where I come from. I come from that perspective of I'm going to do what's best for this work, whatever you want to call it, at all times. And that makes me live my life with a different set of values in terms of, you know, what priority in my life and what's not.
And it's interesting how, as you mentioned, you know, we go through these changes and awakenings, and it's not like the other stuff necessarily goes away. You just see it differently.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's still there, and maybe amplified even. How is the court case thing going?
Well, that runs on, and it's enormously expensive. You know, I've had people come into my life in this cycle of 10 years, and it's been an interesting, from the perspective I am now, to look back and see how the people, first of all, vehemently say how passionate they are in supporting what you're doing. And, oh, this information's got to get out, and it's all fantastic, and, oh, my goodness, it's so important. And at the same time, they make your life and your ability to communicate that work more difficult than anyone else. And in this period now that I'm living through, these people and those influences, those energies are going out of my life, and this is all part of this transformation. We can see the problems we have as, oh, God, everything's gone wrong. Oh, my goodness. Or we can say, hey, how do you make steel stronger, harder, more impossible to destroy? You put it through fire, you know, and you hammer it into what you want. And no one said it was going to be easy. So I've had so many challenges in my life, and it's not just me. I mean, of course, everyone has challenges in their life. But I've had so many challenges in the last, 20 years that it's like my arthritis, Nicole, to be honest. I've had arthritis since I was 15. I played professional soccer with it till I was 19, and then it got so bad. Sorry, 21 it was, not 19. I thought I was going to stop at 19, but I kept going till 21. And I played professional soccer, and much of the time in agony. But eventually it was too bad, I had to give up. And it's kind of, you know, progressed through the years and stuff like that. And to me, pain that would give incredible grief and suppress the people's ability to do things and put them in a really bad space because it's so painful. To me, it's so natural to me to be in pain that the threshold just is not the same. And that doesn't mean, you know, I'm better than anyone else or braver than anyone else or anything like that. It's just the fact that I have experienced pain on a daily basis since, well, I was a teenager virtually. And so, therefore, it's not the same to me. And it's a similar situation with these challenges you get. Just one of the challenges might floor people and make them give up. But when you have one after the other, it's like, all right, bring them on, whatever. Because they ain't going to stop me. You know, I ain't going to be stopped. So throw everything you like, you know, and it doesn't matter. It's like, I really remember the Muhammad Ali fight when he fought George Foreman. And Muhammad Ali was coming towards the end of his career. He was not as fit and strong as he was before. And George Foreman was the big hitter. He was the man, the champion. No one could beat him. And Ali went in the ring with him. And George Foreman threw punch after punch after punch after punch. And Ali was virtually throwing no punches because he was just defending himself from damage. And then in the end, Foreman had punched himself out so much he could hardly lift his hands in the air, never mind punch anybody. And Ali hit him and he went down. I come from that perspective, if you like. Not that I want to hit anybody or hurt anybody, but these challenges and people that try to bring me down and people that try to make what I'm doing more difficult, often while saying that they're trying to support me, that is just, you know, okay, just another thing to deal with, so we'll deal with it, okay? And through all of this period of 10 years, like I say, while all this has been going on, it's been a tremendously creative period for me. It's been the most creative period of my life, with book after book after book after book. And I've been through this situation to secure control of my books, which is still going on, although we're further down the road than we were when we started. And without the financial support of people that support me through the website, you know, we would be finished now. I mean, there would be no books. None of my books would be in circulation. There'd be no new ones. Simple as that. And it's been a fantastic encouragement to me on a level that people who've contributed will never fully understand. To see in the situation that I'm in, trying to communicate affirmation through blockages in our society, which is actually structured to stop this stuff coming out, obviously, that there is so much support, and I'm not on my own. It feels like it sometimes, but I know I'm not, and this court case has shown me that, and so it has its positive side. So in this period where I've been involved in legal things and going to court to get control of my books again, I've also written a really major work, which is just been finished, is going to come out in September, which is pulling together all the things that I've researched and come up with over the last 20 years, plus a massive new stuff, and it's fitting the dots together. You know, and at the end of the day, sometimes I've been working 12 hours a day on it, six in the morning. I like to work early, through to 6 at night, sometimes 8 at night. And it's been such a mental challenge because there's so many dots to connect and so much information to hold in your head until you can connect it with this and weave it with this. But sometimes I walked out of the little office where I work like a zombie. You know, what day is it? What planet is it? What's my name? But this has all been done while all this stuff's been going on. So it is possible, despite efforts to divert you, despite efforts to block what you're trying to do, it's still possible to deal with that and still keep walking, mm-hmm. and still keep producing. And I think this is the most comprehensive and cutting edge book that I've come up with so far.
I've always noticed that it's amazing what we can do when we have to, when we're pushed to the wall and extended by these kinds of things. So what is the book called?
It's called the David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy, and the subtitle is Brackets and How to End It. And it's weaving together not just how the conspiracy works, but the nature of reality and how it's manipulated, how we create reality, how the body is a computer and we identify with the computer as who we are when we really consciousness. And there's lots of people doing fantastic work communicating now the 5 cents level of this manipulation, the banking scam, the political manipulation, the wars on terror and 9/11, all that stuff. And that's all in the book. It's all weaved together with all this other stuff. But to really, A, understand the scale of what's going on and the foundation of it, which is the manipulation of our reality by understanding how we create reality while at the same time structuring society and education and science so that we don't know that. If we don't know how we create reality and the manipulators do, well, you know, I mean, it's, you know, talk about candy from a baby. It's a piece of cake to manipulate vast numbers of people. If you don't understand that, then you can reveal, and it needs to be, and congratulations to them, you can reveal the way the 5 cents level of reality works and how it's manipulated and how the secret societies operate and how politicians are wangled into position and how they're not in power at all. They're just vehicles for people in the shadows who are the real power structure. You can do all that, and it should be done. But to really understand the big, big level within which that plays out as a physical experience, we need to understand the nature of reality. And we also need to understand that for the crucial part of the book and the crucial part of what we're doing, which is, okay, there's a manipulation going on. We're being manipulated to operate in 5 cents reality and disconnect from multidimensional consciousness so that we have a tiny, tiny perspective on life and who we are instead of being able to see it in the greater vastness of all that is. To do that, we've got to understand reality and how we create it so that we can stop having people manipulate our reality to suit them and start to create our own one that we want and take the freedom back to create our own universes rather than have to be imprisoned in someone else's. All that's in the book, and I'm so pleased with it because of the way the dots connect. And the more that I worked on it, the more the dots connected, the more blatant and understandable became the way the world is structured today. Why things are done in certain ways, why they're structured in certain ways, why this happens, why that happens, why they do it that way. Once you get the bigger picture, you get the coordinates for who we are, where we are, and what's going on, then the world starts to make absolute sense because it's so important that the pressure groups of various kinds that are challenging the environmental things, they're challenging banking scams, they're challenging the pharmaceuticals, government manipulation. They need to understand they're actually challenging the same force. And all these different things that these pressure groups are set up to campaign against or for are actually faces on the same, or masks on the same face. And we need to start getting together and understanding this, otherwise we're just divided and ruled, even at the level of campaigning to change the injustices of the world. Another area that I go into in some detail in the book, and I think it's becoming increasingly important, Nicole, to be honest, and that's global warming. What I call the carbon cultists are now using global warming to bring in a change, more and more draconian, appropriately, draconian rules, laws, more and more taxation, more and more reasons to stop doing this or to do that. It's becoming more the problem, reaction, solution, excuse than even 9/11. It's very, very important that people realize that, yes, the temperature is going up, but the lie is in the why. Why is it going up? It's going up not because of human carbon dioxide emissions. It's going up because the sun is generating more solar radiation. And when you hear the propaganda, the world's top scientists are all agreed. No, they're not all agreed. The United Nations panel on climate change is actually a political organization. And many, many, many scientists that were even involved in the report don't agree with the conclusions that the report comes to, which have been communicated through an unquestioning media to the public, who get the impression that everyone's agreed. No, they're not. And the evidence is absolutely blatant and stunning that the sun is emitting more solar radiation, therefore it's warming. And that's why other planets, including Mars and others, are also getting hotter. Now, let me think. Now, also, these different planets in this solar system are all getting hotter at the same time. Now, what's the common theme? Do they have factories on Mars? Do we ever see a picture of that on Mars and things? Or what was it? What could it be? Maybe it's turbocharged trucks on Jupiter. Maybe that's what it is. It's the sun. Of course it's the sun. It's the common theme. And what a staggering thing, Nicole. What a staggering kind of conclusion to come to, that when the sun gets hotter, the planet temperature goes up. Have you noticed that? When you go out and the sun comes out, it gets warmer. I mean, this is some of these scientists are the ones that understand that the carbon dioxide causes global warming scam is a nonsense. They are utterly incredulous at how obvious it is what the real cause of global warming is, while it's being completely ignored. And when you look at the graph of what they call sunspot activity, when there's more and more energy being generated from the sun. I mean, some of these sunspots, these great explosions on the sun, some of them are as big as Jupiter. And the more sunspot activity that you see, the more solar radiation is being projected into the solar system, and the more the temperature goes up. And we had a situation hundreds of years ago where they had what scientists call the medieval warm period, when the temperature was higher than it is today. And so you say, hold on a second, I read history about the medieval period. I never heard anything about turbocharged handcarts. Did you hear about that? And the exhaust fumes coming out of flowers and stuff, I don't remember that. So what caused global warming in the medieval warm period? The sun did. And there was a period of great sunspot activity. Then sunspot activity started to fall until it reached the point where it was measured by an observer, a scientist called Maunder, and it's got the scientific name now, the Maunder minimum, when sunspot activity virtually not stopped, but almost was unmeasurable. And that's when we had, following the medieval warm period, what science calls the Little Ice Age. This is the Little Ice Age when you still see some of the pictures on Christmas cards back in the 16th, 1700s, when people were literally having ice bears on the River Thames because it had frozen over. Then the sunspot activity started to increase, and the temperature on Earth started to rise, and it went up and up and up, and the graph of sunspot activity increase to Earth temperature increase is like they're connected by magnets. They are absolutely at one, the two of them. It went up, the sunspot activity and temperature, to 1940, at which point it fell, sunspot activity fell, and so therefore did temperature, from 1940 to 1975. So much so, Nicole, that the BBC in the early 70s were doing documentaries about the possibility of a coming ice age, and they were showing mocked-up pictures of London frozen under ice, and the great weather catastrophe was going to be an ice age. From 1975, the sunspot activity started rising again, and so did Earth temperature. And the both of them, one following the other, have gone on rising ever since until we reach today. Carbon dioxide is a minor greenhouse gas. 95% of greenhouse gases is water vapor. I got a great idea. Let's ban water. Hey, let's have a kind of blockage on the amount of water we can produce. I mean, please. So you've got carbon dioxide being a small, a fractional percentage of greenhouse gases, and the amount that humans produce is a fraction of that. Now, I'm not saying pollution is a good thing. This is where they divert you and change the point of the argument. I'm not saying that pollution is a good thing. It'd be great to have less pollution. Of course it would. But the question is not that in the case of global warming. It's do carbon dioxide emissions cause the rising temperature? Because it's on that lie, provably so, that all these new laws, taxations, changes, impositions are being justified. And we ain't seeing anything yet. This theory is growing all the time. And there are certain red flags, alarm bells that go off when you research this subject for as long as I have. And one of them is called Al Gore. The very fact that Al Gore, whatever Al Gore is involved in, is a scam because he's a front man for the mob, the Illuminati. This is the reason why when he was blatantly not allowed to be president when he had the votes to be so and Bush won in 2000, he never kicked up the stink that anyone else would in that situation when it was quite obvious there'd been a manipulation of the vote. He didn't do it because that wasn't his role. He knows his place. And now he becomes a priest, because it's become a religion, of the carbon cult. And he's produced this documentary, An Inconvenient Truth, and the book of the same name. I understand, my goodness me, he's been proposed for the Nobel Peace Prize. Well, for making a documentary, telling lies. I mean, is it me or what? And anything that Al Gore is involved in is part of the scam. So you put all these things together, and global warming is, well, not global warming because the temperature's going up, but the fact that it's caused by carbon dioxide emissions is one of the major cards being played now to push on the Orwellian centralized state.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. Is that in your book?
Yes, in detail, okay. With the graphs and stuff to show. And one other thing that happens, Nicole, that affects temperature is that when there's an increase in solar radiation hitting the Earth, there is a decrease in cosmic rays. And it's cosmic rays interacting with water vapor that creates clouds. And, of course, if there's a reduction in cosmic rays, there's a reduction in cloud activity. Therefore, there's a much greater amount of solar radiation goes directly to the Earth and the temperature goes up. And, again, the graph of the cosmic rays stroke against sunspot activity are, again, two graphs with a magnet that go up and down with each other. Of course they do, because one's causing the reaction from the other. It is not even vaguely theoretical that increased solar radiation is the cause of global warming. It's clear, provable fact. The reason that we don't know that, except that there was a wonderful documentary in this country a few months ago called The Great Global Warming Swindle, in which these scientists, and really, really at the top of their professions and their specialities, were actually given a platform at last, just once, to say carbon caused global warming is a nonsense. And explain why. And the reason that that's not known by most people is because the propaganda is all one way. And again, there are other alarm bells in situations when there's a scam going on. And one of them is when only one side of the argument is given and stressed against a situation where anyone who's putting the alternative is not challenged on the facts, they are attacked personally and dismissed in terms of almost, there's this phrase now that's been thrown around by some of these carbon cultists called global warming deniers. Mm-hmm. It's like Holocaust denier, you know. It, by definition, you're a really bad person and you don't care about people and you don't care about the earth and you're really, really horrible if you say, actually, this global warming is being caused by something else. And when you've got that combination, Eva, of one side of the argument being stressed and anyone put it the other side of the argument being attacked personally and vilified personally, then you've got a massive scab on your hands. And these scientists were saying how if you put forward a research project which is based on global warming is caused by carbon dioxide, you get the funding. You do the opposite. You put forward a desire for funding to bring about research that shows that it's the sun. No way do you get the funding. In fact, you start to get vilified within the profession. You know, some of these scientists have had death threats simply by saying, it's a scam, it's a lie, this is not caused by that. And that's always a obvious sign of a massive manipulation going on, and it is, that's what it is, and it's really up front now, really at the cutting edge of the justifications for pushing the agenda forward.
Well, it smacks of manipulation in the way it's been delivered in, you know, like you said, introducing taxes and creating more ways of lack and limitation kind of energy in the media. Mm-hmm. And definitely it's been a very unpopular thing to speak against. And I think you're definitely onto something there. It's been interesting not being able to voice that in very many places, as you say.
Right.
Definitely a sign.
But the thing is, if what you're saying is correct, then keep saying it, because eventually it'll be proof, sir. I mean, one of the reasons that so many people are turning to my books and information in latter years is because what was in them years ago is now happening. And so I'd say to people, just because people hurl abuse at you or try to undermine you or whatever, again, coming back to what we talked about earlier, point of perspective. If your point of perspective is in this world and what people think of you because you're caught in the illusion, then you might shut up if you start saying things and get a bad reaction. But if you hold the perspective, what would I think of what I'm doing? What would my choice be if I was coming from the perspective outside the body? Then, of course, from that perspective, you would think, oh my goodness me, why did I shut up? Because it didn't matter, because it was just a delusion. What does it matter what people said to me? Why did I shut up? So, and if you can hold that perspective while you're here, then you don't shut up, because you know that what people say about you, it does not matter from the perspective of the wider consciousness, infinite consciousness, out-of-body consciousness. So just keep talking, and if what you're saying is right, it will eventually prove to be so. And one thing's for sure, if you shut up and walk away, nothing's going to change, and those that are putting the lies out to manipulate the masses of the people, they are just going to have a free rein to do it. I'm not having that. I will not have that. I will not shut up. I will not shut up under any circumstances, and people can hurl as much abuse as they like, undermine me as much as they like. This left foot is going in front of the right foot, and then the right foot's going in front of the left foot, and then I'm going to start a jog, and then I'm going to start a sprint, and you try to stop me, you know? You can't say that. Oh, just listen. You got ears on you? Yeah, great. Okay. Just listen. You watch me say it. And if it has a power in itself, we are far more powerful than ever we think that we are, because we still observe ourselves from the body computer level of reality. We look in the mirror and we think that's ours. No, it's not. I don't do that anymore. When I look in the mirror, I see a vehicle. I see a highly advanced computer. That's what I see. I am consciousness. You are consciousness. We're all consciousness. We're all the same infinite consciousness. And that infinite consciousness has infinite power for change, infinite power for creativity, infinite power for genius, infinite power for everything. Because that's what it is, infinite. It's all. So if we can live our lives within this computer, not relate who we are to it, but know what it's a vehicle to experience this frequency range, which allows us to pick things up, because, of course, if we didn't have a body that resonated within the frequency range you want to interact with, we couldn't pick anything up, because consciousness is vibrating so fast that it would it just pass through it. There'd be no interaction. And so it's a vehicle. But we have been kidded and manipulated into believing the vehicle is us. It's like being at your desk and looking on the PC and stuff and thinking the computer's you. People say that's crazy. You know, if you were two spacemen on the moon and one of them started identifying who he was with his spacesuit, I mean, what would they say? I mean, the other guy would be, "Hey, Houston, we got a problem. Bill thinks he's his spacesuit. Oh my God, he's gone mad." Well, he may have done, but that's what we're doing all the time because we don't realize it's a spacesuit. We think it's us. And if we can tap in to that level of infinite consciousness, then it's not David Icke or Nicole or Bill Smith who is actually expressing into this reality. It's infinite consciousness is doing it. Infinite power, infinite ability for creativity, and all the other stuff I was talking about. So we become the whole expressing itself in this reality through what we call a body, instead of being just a little me, because I'm just a body, and I'm all I am, and what can I do, and I'm just a little public, and they're ever so powerful, and what can I do? It's a completely different point of perspective. So I'm not having it. I am not showing up. I will not shut up. And if what I'm saying is true, why should I? And if it isn't, I shouldn't be saying it. So, no matter what people say about you. It doesn't matter how people seek to disrupt you or hurl abuse at you or try to get people to think bad of you and all this stuff. It doesn't matter. It's an illusion.
I can't tell you how many times I've been listening to the news lately, especially over the last year with the amount of bills that have whooshed through, especially in the states as far as taking, you know, civil liberties, what's left of them, and rewriting them. The most recent being, I think it was about a month ago, when they declared that George Bush had the power to single-handedly, without counsel with anyone, declare national emergency.
That's right. The truth is that George Bush hasn't got the power to tie shoelaces. He's the vehicle through which the people with power are bringing that stuff in and will dictate when it does and when it doesn't. But, you know, you're absolutely right. I've got an archive on my website, and one of the archives is Big Brother and all those kind of stories. If anyone wants to go through those, because, you know, like you do, you know, you have the website and you have the news and stuff, so you're constantly seeing stuff that most people don't see because most of it doesn't get on the news. The main news are in the main newspapers. And the rate of imposition and the destruction of basic freedoms is just breathtaking. But not just the speed, but the breadth and scale of kind of real basic freedoms that have been taken away. But I see this in, I go into this in the book, I see this in a from a rather different perspective. I don't think the prime reason for all this is more control. I think the prime reason for it is holding on to the control that's already there. Of course, to an extent, they're getting more control by doing these things. But the reason it's happening now is because there is an energetic change going on. It's one of these great cycles. And energy is coming into this reality, which is starting to act like a spiritual alarm clock. It's starting to wake people up. And I've been a barometer for this over the last 20 years, because when I started, no one wanted to know. They just laughed in my face and laughed at me on the telly and laughed at me in the street. There was just no interest, really, apart from a few. And now I've seen it's exponential. It's gathering pace. And the curve is going up ever more steeply of people that are beginning to open their minds to this and wake up and see what they would have laughed at before. I was on a ferry the other day where this smart-suited guy came up to me and said, "Can I talk to you? I want to discuss things with you." And he sat down. It turns out he's a physicist, this guy. And he said, "Well, how do you see reality, basically?" And I explained about the body, the computer, the holographic internet, as I call it, this reality, and all the stuff that we've talked about before in this program. And he's going, "Oh, my God, that makes so much sense." And he's a bloody physicist. And there are people now, even in the left brain professions, where they find getting their heads around some of this stuff very difficult because their right brain is under-stimulated. They're beginning to open their minds to this. I know people who I would have thought, "Oh my goodness me, no way that guy's going to ever wake up in my lifetime." And suddenly they're really seriously woken up, and because we're not learning anything new. We're remembering what we already know by removing the barriers we create and throw around, these energetic barriers that disconnect us from that level of knowledge, that level of knowing that is always there, but we shut ourselves off from it and are manipulated to do that by the way society is structured. So there is this change going on, this energetic change, and it is really starting to have an effect. I mean, some people have connected it to the Mayan calendar of 2012 and this great end of one cycle of energetic cycle, the start of another, and clearly the parallels are obvious. There has to be a connection. My feeling is on 2012, it's not going to be 1 minute or 1 hour in 1 year when there's suddenly going to be this vast change. I think it's 2012 is the window, a window in the midst of this change, which is gathering pace all the time, and by 2012 it's going to be much further forward than it is now. And so at the level of the real power brokers, the real power point of power, which is expressing itself through the Bushes and the Blairs and the Kissingers, they know this is happening, and they've been preparing for it coming. And so it's no accident, Nicole, absolutely none whatsoever, that in the time that this awakening and this energetic change is happening, this is the very time that they've whacked in all these Orwellian changes, and what they're really looking for is microchipped people. And on one level, yes, it's about electronic tagging and knowing where everyone is, but the real reason is to manipulate the electrochemical processes of the body to shut it down from accessing this higher consciousness that's now becoming available. One of the things I've done in this new book, if you look at things like fluoride in the water, aspartame, this horrendous sugar substitute that's in virtually everything now, anything that says sugar-free, aspartame, and you look at additives in food, all different kinds, in food and drink, mobile phone frequencies and stuff like that, mobile phone masts and other communication frequencies, there is a real common theme among all of them, and that is they excite brain cells to stop the brain working properly and efficiently. And the other thing is their effect on the pineal gland in the center of the brain. And the pineal gland is reckoned to connect into the third eye and into a dimensional connection. And the pineal gland comes up again and again in terms of the adverse effect of all these things I'm talking about. This is why the book would be such an eye-opener for people, because once you get the perspective of what's going on, the individual things like this in that drink or this in that food and mobile phones and all that stuff, it all starts to come together, and you can see how it's been coordinated to have a particular effect. And the fundamental effect is to shut down even more our ability to access knowledge, understanding, wisdom beyond the five sense reality, and to be able to see this world for what it really is. So the microchip is the jewel in the crown of this campaign to imprison us in this reality, because the brain is like the central processing unit of the computer on your desk, the central processing unit that's the one that filters and sorts out all the information traffic. Well, that's what the brain does. The brain receives information from all over the body, and it sends out information to all over the body. It's the central processing unit. In fact, the central processing unit in a computer is known by computer people as the brain of the computer. Now, the CPU, as they call it, the central processing unit in a computer, is a microchip. And if you put a microchip into the body and you know what you're doing, then you are able to manipulate the messages going around the body, the electrochemical messages, which are creating reality. And one of the other things that I've really gone into in the book in some detail is to show just how much the body is not us. And one of the ways I've shown that is that emotion and what we call thought, on a five-sense level of thought, they are not us. They are electrochemical processes. This is why people can become depressed if they live next to a mobile phone mast or live under power lines, and they can become depressed if they have certain chemicals, like a woman here 2 years ago who'd been in clinical depression for 40 years, and then someone suggested or asked her, can you think of anything that you did or happened to you 40 years ago that caused all this? She'd been in and out of mental institutions for 40 years, this woman. And she said, the only thing I can remember is that I had lots of tooth fillings done. So I think it was about 19. So the person suggested that maybe it was mercury that would cause this. So she had the mercury fillings taken out and replaced by others. She had a mercury detox. And what happened? 40 years of depression disappeared. And yet, Nicole, if someone had said about that person, what was their personality? Who are they? They'd have said, oh, she's a manic depressive. No, that wasn't her. It was the effect of mercury on her body computer. So we are thinking even that our emotions are us when they are a body computer phenomenon. Once again, a common theme of accounts from near-death experiences is that they did not, in the near-death state, the out-of-body state, they did not have emotion that we would perceive as emotion. It wasn't they were cold and emotionless, as we think you have to be if you're not feeling human emotion. They were in a very different state of being, which did not include these low vibrational emotions which hold us in servitude to them and cause our behavior and perspective to be distorted. It's a body computer phenomenon. And once again, we need, if we're going to get out of this manipulated limitation and sense of limitation, we need to stop identifying with our emotions. All right, we're going to get emotional because we were in the body, and it's the body that gets emotional. I mean, people say it's not human. Well, what's human? Out-of-body consciousness is not human, it's consciousness. What is human? What makes us human? The computer program, the hard drive of the computer, which we call the DNA, the cellular structure, that is what makes us human, that program. That's why when you come into the body and you experience this world through it, you perceive yourself to be human and you act in a human way, or what people sometimes call an inhuman way, if you act in certain ways. But the point being that what makes us human is the computer. We are not human. Human is what we are experiencing. We are consciousness. And if you move your perspective to see everything from the point of view of consciousness rather than being human, then your whole perspective changes. And once again, as I was saying earlier, the way you act towards people, the way you act in certain situations, which people around you maybe think you should act in this way because they think you should act according to program, but you act in a completely different way because you realize that it is a program and that these things that we take so seriously, these various interactions, are utterly irrelevant. It's computer level of reality interacting with each other. We need to come from consciousness where you see that this stuff is irrelevant and therefore treat it as such, and don't get diverted by it, and just keep the focus of what consciousness would do rather than what the body computer is programmed to do. Because one will keep us in the prison cell and one will fling the door open.
Well, I know we're almost at the top of the hour already, and you've got a grandchild being born as we speak, so...
That's right. About 10 minutes before I started, I got a call that my daughter is started labor to deliver my second grandchild. There's so many things happening in my life which are the old going out and that old tired energy dying and disappearing out of my life, and a real new, vibrant, positive, optimistic energy coming in. And this is the next cycle, and I can't wait for it to start motoring.
And you know, a lot of people have been reporting that kind of real major shift going on for them right now. So
yeah, exactly.
Exciting.
This is the energetic change taking place. But, you know, if you're a transistor radio and you're tuned to Radio 1, Radio 2 may be in the atmosphere waiting to be tuned to. But if you don't move your dial to Radio 2, you're going to stay on Radio 1. And so there is tremendous opportunity now happening for us to absolutely open up to a vast new understanding or memory of who we are and the nature of reality and how we can control our reality instead of having it control us. And it's all there waiting to be tuned to. All we've got to do is lose all these programmed responses and programmed emotions and programmed sense of victimization that keep us from the full magnitude of who we are. And that whole cycle in my life is coming to an end. And I tell you, the more I feel this new energy coming in, it's like the world that was never was. It's just a completely different way of living life and experiencing life, and it's impossible to describe unless you've experienced it. And like you say, quite rightly, more and more people are doing that, but they have to be like the snake and shed the skin, shed the old skin, the old energetic skin, and all its emotional ties and limitations and demands. And this is a situation, so you must act like this in this situation because my program says so. And if you don't, then I must react against you for not doing what I want and think you should do and all that stuff. Shed that skin and come from a point of view of consciousness, and bingo, the world changes. And it's a wonderful, wonderful time to be in this reality. Not to be alive, because we're always alive. We're infinite life, infinite consciousness, eternal. But to be in this reality now is a wonderful, wonderful time. We are going to make great change here. And the Orwellian state, while it seems to be getting stronger and stronger, it's in a desperate, desperate, panic-stricken effort to stop the inevitable happening. It is standing up in a river, trying to hold the river back, or even perhaps more appropriately, standing on the seashore, trying to hold the tide back. Mm. It can build a few walls, it can build a few groins and put a few rocks in the way. Yes, it can. But that tide's coming in, and no one's going to stop it. So the Illuminati's like King Canute, or whoever it was, King Canute tried to hold the tide back and couldn't. They think they have power. They are. Compared with the power of infinite consciousness, the Illuminati and all the power structures, they're like flies on an elephant's back. And we're going to see that.
Well, I have a jillion more questions. I hope we can get you back on the show really
quickly. No problem. No, it's been great, Nicole.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful time. It really is.
It's very exciting, and I'm so grateful that you're a part of it and a part of the show, and thank you so much for being here, David.
Pleasure, Nicole. Thank you very much.
Take care. Talk soon.
I'm just going off another baby now.
Yeah. Well, have fun with that.
Okay. Well, if you contact me whenever you feel the need for another one.
Absolutely. Well, I'd actually love to do audience questions for the next one, and really, because
you're
on a roll, right?
Well, what we could do it when the book's launched, if you like.
Oh, that's what I want to ask you too. Where and how?
Well, it's going to be launched in September, and it's finished, and it's just at the design stage now of the book, so it should be at the printers by late July, which will give us books in our hands by early September.
Awesome, great. Well, let's get you on by then and do some more questions.
Brilliant, yeah. Well, maybe late August, something like that.
Absolutely, perfect.
Okay.
Well,
cheers, my dear. How are you? All right? You well?
Yeah, it's been a big transition period for me too.
And it can be a bugger. It can, really. I mean, I'm going through an absolute cleansing in my life.
Cleansing is the word. Yeah.
Yeah. So many, everything that's not necessary, or that's holding you back, or that is manipulating you.
Yeah.
They can't hold on to you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the clutches, the energetic clutches are just falling away.
Yeah.
They can't do it, because as you enter higher frequencies of energy, those lower frequencies of energy that have been able to lock into you and put their clutches into you, they can't hold on anymore, because radio 1 can't hold on to radio 2 once radio 2 expresses that frequency.
Yeah, it's very true, and it becomes real apparent.
Yeah. What happens in the outer world is that people in your life disappear and other people come in.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you do, they change, and other things come in. And it's like the changing of the guard, the energetic guard. And it's a wonderful time, and I feel I feel such a sense of freedom since certain things have happened in my life in the last little while. And it's just like great weights have fallen from my shoulders, and I'd say it's just fantastic. Great to talk to you again.
It's been a pleasure. Talk soon.
Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
Did you know that News for the Soul is home to the largest totally free life-changing audio resource on the World Wide Web? And did you know that journalist and single mom Nicole Whitney is single-handedly making this freely available for you to hear? That's why your support is critical to help keep News for the Soul totally free. You can help in several ways.
Firstly, you can tell everyone you know about News for the Soul. So many people out there still do not know about this totally free life-changing resource. So do us, yourself, and your friends a favor and pass it on today. Secondly, financial support for News for the Soul helps keep the show going, whether it's through advertising, donations, or purchases of our exclusive audio and video packages, like the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, which will teach you how to bend metal with your mind for real. This support helps keep us on the air. Go to newsforthesoul.com now to find out more. We invite you to help us help the world, and thanks for tuning in. It's listeners like you who have made News for the Soul the number one life-changing talk radio show in the world, according to Google and AOL. Together, we are already making a difference in our world. So thank you for listening, and thanks in advance for your support. Now, let's get back to the show. Attention, like-minded business owners. Do you have an amazing solution? A product or service for the soul? Something we can't find out about in mainstream media? Then we have a solution for you. News for the Soul is airing its Solutions for the Soul networking fundraiser show, and you could be one of our guests. This is an amazing opportunity to join host Nicole Whitney on the air to talk about your solution and share your information with the world. All guests must be pre-screened, and there is a fee to participate. All proceeds directly keep the News for the Soul show archived totally free for the world to hear, and all interviews are aired indefinitely online after the show. To find out more, go to newsforthesoul.com and click on the Solution Show banner now. That's newsforthesoul.com. And don't let fear stand in your way. This could be your turn to shine in the News for the Soul spotlight.
In December 2005, News for the Soul host Nicole Whitney experienced the most dramatic, life-changing psychic reading of her life. In that brief 10-minute mini-session, she released years of emotional baggage when Carrie O'Connor connected with a recently deceased family member, bringing Nicole a life-changing message from beyond the grave. Since that fateful day, Nicole has invited Carrie O'Connor on as a regular News for the Soul guest to do readings on the air. But you do not have to wait. Carrie is available for private sessions right now. Nicole has laughingly suggested wearing goggles and a helmet for these sessions because of the powerful energy that seems to come through Carrie when she's doing a reading. But don't take our word for it. Experience it for yourself. So pack up your goggles and helmet and book your life-changing session with Carrie O'Connor today. Go to InsideOut-OutsideIn.com. That's InsideOut-OutsideIn.com.
Who are you? Why are you here? What is the meaning of life? These burning questions have plagued mankind throughout our existence. How would you like to experience the process that would allow you to have some of the answers? Answers that would cause you to live with higher awareness and deeper authenticity from now on? Well, you can. Warrior Sage is offering an experiential 5-day enlightenment workshop called Illumination Intensive. Regularly about $3,000 to attend, Satyan Raja of Warrior Sage is offering this life-changing 5-day course to News for the Soul listeners totally for free. That's right. The tuition has been completely waived for all News for the Soul listeners. Satyan says this experience is so profound, he wants to share it with the world. So don't miss out on this special opportunity. To have your own direct experience of awakening with Warrior Sage, go to IlluminationIntensive.com now and tell them News for the Soul sent you. That's IlluminationIntensive.com.
How would you like to learn how to bend metal with your mind for real? Well, you can. News for the Soul is home to the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, an instantly downloadable digital gift that contains 2 hours of audio and visual instructions designed to get your mind out of the way and teach you how to truly affect solid matter just with your thoughts. Find out once and for all how you are affecting your reality with every thought you think. Don't let anything block you from creating the life that you want. Download the newsforthesoul.com Spoon Bending Kit today. Just go to newsforthesoul.com right now and click on the bent spoon. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul. This has been News for the Soul with Nicole Whitney. Visit us anytime online at www.newsforthesoul.com, where you can listen to all our previously aired shows at any time and so much more. Have a great week, and remember, what you focus on expands.
Get ready. It's time for News for the Soul. Life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Join us as we celebrate 11 years of empowerment broadcasts, becoming the number one life-changing talk radio show in the world, according to Google, AOL, MSN, YouTube, and more, and home to the largest, totally free transformational audio library in the world. All found at newsofthesoul.com. And now, here's your host and the founder of News of the Soul, the one they're calling the Oprah of the Internet, Nicole Whitney.
Good morning, Monday morning. Well, it is here in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and we're live for a special show, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. My guest, a regular of many, many years on News for the Soul, yay, one of my favorite people and one of the most intriguing adventures on the air to date, David Icke, the quote-unquote most controversial speaker in the world. We're going to be talking about what's new, what's the latest. I'm sure swine flu and those kinds of latest current events are going to work their way into the conversation, which I'm sure, as always, will be intriguing and inspiring and perhaps even surprising. We're going to try to get him on the line here momentarily, and also I have put it out to field some questions. Never had a chance really to do that prior with David, so we'll see if we can work some of those questions you sent in into the show. And here's what we'll do. We'll get the breaks out of the way. Not that they're in the way, but we'll get them done so we can go straight through, hopefully, live with David momentarily. DavidIcke.com is his website, and if you miss any of this show, our website, where you can hear it all free all the time forevermore, newsforthesoul.com. We will see you in a couple of minutes.
For years, News for the Soul listeners have had a direct experience with their power to create their reality through our exclusive Spoon Bending Kit, a mind over matter training that teaches you how to bend metal with your mind for real. Well, what if you can use that same technology on your finances? What if you can take your same intention power and use it on the so-called recession? Well, you can. News for the Soul has just announced the release of its newest life-changing kit, the Prosperity Kit. We have combined the intention technology of our spoon-bending kits with a decade of research to create a program that has the power to change your financial life. Isn't it time to transcend fear and live the way we intended? For real? Go now to newsforthesoul.com and click on the Prosperity Kit banner. That's newsforthesoul.com.
In December 2005, News for the Soul host Nicole Whitney experienced the most dramatic, life-changing psychic reading of her life. In that brief 10-minute mini-session, she released years of emotional baggage when Carrie O'Connor connected with a recently deceased family member, bringing Nicole a life-changing message from beyond the grave. Since that fateful day, Nicole has invited Carrie O'Connor on as a regular News for the Soul guest to do readings on the air. But you do not have to wait. Carrie is available for private sessions right now. Nicole has laughingly suggested wearing goggles and a helmet for these sessions because of the powerful energy that seems to come through Carrie when she's doing a reading. But don't take our word for it. Experience it for yourself. So pack up your goggles and helmet and book your life-changing session with Carrie O'Connor today. Go to CarrieO'Connor.com. That's CarrieO'Connor.com.
How would you like to learn how to bend metal with your mind for real? Well, you can. News for the Soul is home to the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, an instantly downloadable digital gift that contains 2 hours of audio and visual instructions designed to get your mind out of the way and teach you how to truly affect solid matter just with your thoughts. Find out once and for all how you are affecting your reality with every thought you think. Don't let anything block you from creating the life that you want. Download the newsforthesoul.com spoon bending kit today. Just go to newsforthesoul.com right now and click on the bent spoon. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Who are you? Why are you here? What is the meaning of life? These burning questions have plagued mankind throughout our existence. How would you like to experience a process that would allow you to have some of the answers? Answers that would cause you to live with higher awareness and deeper authenticity from now on? Well, you can. Warrior Sage is offering an experiential 5-day enlightenment workshop called Illumination Intensive. Regularly about $3,000 to attend, Satyan Raja of Warrior Sage is offering this life-changing 5-day course to News for the Soul listeners totally for free. That's right. The tuition has been completely waived for all News for the Soul listeners. Satyan says this experience is so profound, he wants to share it with the world. So don't miss out on this special opportunity. To have your own direct experience of awakening with Warrior Sage, go to illuminationintensive.com now and tell them News for the Soul sent you. That's illuminationintensive.com.
Are you in pain, overweight, unwell, stuck, or unhappy with any area of your life? Healing from the body level up can help you. HBLU is a unique mind-body holistic psychotherapy for the 21st century. Created by Dr. Judith Swack, HBLU is an effective way to eliminate struggle by clearing mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual blocks to success, so you can rapidly achieve the results you want to live a full, happy, healthy, and satisfying life. Tune in to our next News for the Soul broadcast featuring Dr. Judith Swack, or visit HBLU.org right now to find out more. That's HBLU.org.
For years, News for the Soul listeners have had a direct experience with their power to create their reality through our exclusive Spoon Bending Kit, a mind over matter training that teaches you how to bend metal with your mind for real. Well, what if you can use that same technology on your finances? What if you can take your same intention power and use it on the so-called recession? Well, you can. News for the Soul has just announced the release of its newest life-changing kit, the Prosperity Kit. We have combined the intention technology of our spoon bending kits with a decade of research to create a program that has the power to change your financial life. Isn't it time to transcend fear and live the way we intended? For real? Go now to newsforthesoul.com and click on the Prosperity Kit banner. That's news.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
We're back. I'm Christine. This is News for the Soul. Oh, look, it's 11:11 Pacific time. And today on News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained, once again, all covered, of course, one of my favorite guests over the many years we've been talking to him as the human evolution journey continues and lots of adventures. Well, I'm sure today will be no exception to what we're going to be covering. David Icke, the quote-unquote most controversial speaker in the world, is here. DavidIcke.com, that's his website, and we're going to find out what the latest is right now. Welcome back, David, to News for the Soul.
Thanks, Nicole.
So do you really feel like the most controversial speaker in the world, really?
I don't think about it, to be honest. I mean, you know, when you speak things that are different to the prevailing accepted reality, then you become, I guess, controversial to the accepted reality. And I'm saying things that are way outside of what people think is happening in the world and the nature of life itself. So I guess controversy follows me around. But what's happening is that people's minds are opening and letting consciousness in on a gathering scale. And when you do that, people like me become less controversial because people can encompass things that the closed mind rejects by reflex action. So I'm seeing a massive increase in acceptance of things that I say that would have been ridiculed and dismissed immediately not so long ago. Something's happening. A lot of things are happening that aren't good, but a lot of things are happening that are.
Yeah, so you're also, I mean, I've noticed that as well in recent, like the last year or two, huge drastic changes in openness in large amounts of people. So you're seeing that as well.
Oh, I've been seeing it for a long time, because when I started talking about this in its multi-facets, whether it's the day-to-day names, dates, places conspiracy, which has led as to where we are now, which is facing a global dictatorship in the face, or whether it's the nature of reality itself, which is fundamentally connected to what I've just said as well, I'm seeing people's minds open and them being able to encompass concepts and possibilities that they would never have done before. And it's been a exponential curve where it started slowly and then got quicker and then quicker and quicker. And it's incredible now, the number of people who are looking at life from a different angle, different point of observation, and therefore seeing the world and themselves in a completely different light. And we need to do that, and we need to do that fast, because we're heading into times now. This swine flu scam and the vaccination that has been created by those that created swine flu in the first place, and the economic situation that we face, and many, many other things that are planned, are going to be enormously challenging anyway. But if we come from the perspective that we are our bodies, that we are our names, that we are the reflection in the mirror and that's it, then it's going to be a heck of a lot more challenging for those people than those that realize that that's the vehicle that connects us into this virtual reality we call the universe. And what we actually are is consciousness having an experience. And it's going to be so, so important that people view their experience from that perspective, because A, it will give them perspective on what's going on. They'll be able to see the big picture rather than the myopic one, and it will also help them to realize that it's just an experience that they're having, it's not something that's forever, and it's not something that is unchangeable. It's just the experience they're having at this time, and what they are is consciousness, and that's eternal. That's the nature of who they really are, and it's the body that's experiencing this reality, and that's the part of us that, quote, dies. Even that doesn't die, and it dies in the form of a body. It's just infinite energy itself. But if we come from that perspective and hold that we are consciousness having an experience, it's going to be much easier to meet the challenges that are coming, because they are many and they are close.
Hmm. Okay, so I mean, you mentioned the swine flu and the swine flu scam, as you call it, and that it was created by someone. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, of course, I've been talking with you over the years many times about a simple technique I call problem reaction solution. You create the problem, you get the reaction, fear, outrage, do something, and then you offer the solution to the problem you've created. Now, if the problem is not out there, then you either, as with weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, you invent it as a thought form, a theory, a theoretical situation. You know there's no weapons of mass destruction there. You just persuade the people there are, and I call that technique no problem reaction solution. And that's very effective if people don't do any research. There is another aspect of this, which is if you haven't got a problem, then create one. And the swine flu virus that is now supposed to terrify us, I'm shaking as I speak, is was created in a laboratory. There's an Austrian journalist called Jane Burgermeister who's actually filed charges with the FBI against Baxter International, Novartis, and other drug companies, and which all work as one unit if you go high enough, against Obama and against a Rockefeller, a Rothschild, and George Soros, the billionaire financier, and a lot of other people and organizations for actually creating the virus and then the vaccine, which is designed to cause enormous harm to people. There are people who are have researched this in great detail. People go to the headlines on my website, they'll see videos about this from these people talking at some length about their research. And the idea is to so create panic about this deadly swine flu virus that, so they tell us, that they will get mass immunization of the population around the world. See, Baxter International, based in Illinois, it is one of the companies coming up with the vaccine for something that came to light in Mexico in April, I think it was. Baxter International applied for the patent for the vaccine for this strain of swine flu in August 2008. So clearly, to work for Baxter International, you have to be an extremely skilled psychic or corrupt, and I'm not sure about the psychic bit. So what we're looking at is the creation of a perceived problem, and because the symptoms of swine flu are so like what we call normal flu, and about 500,000 people die worldwide of normal flu every year, I mean, in Britain today, they've just introduced a system whereby if you've got symptoms of swine flu, then you don't go to the doctor anymore. You talk to someone on the phone in a call center situation that's been set up. You tell them your symptoms, and they tell you what they think you've got. Now, you've got ordinary flu, or you've got a bad cold. You ring up and you say, I've got these symptoms because the media's told you, be frightened of bird flu. And the guy on the other end or the lady on the other end says, oh, yes, you've got bird flu. Oh, you've got, sorry, swine flu. I mean, swine flu, bird flu is the same. That was another manufactured virus. The two go together. And so what happens is you get ticked off as someone who's got swine flu when you're not necessarily have it at all. And the figures get higher and higher. And the ratchet up of the fear factor. I mean, the government here have said, oh, 65,000 people could get it and all the rest of it. And in doing so, you get people lining up to get the vaccine. And in that vaccine is going to be some really horrible stuff in terms of physical, mental, and emotional damage that's going to come from it. So when you've got companies creating the virus in the first place, the symptoms are being overwhelmingly, in the vast overwhelming number of people, mild. And yet you then have this announcement of a pandemic and this panic to create a vaccine and have massive, massively vast vaccination programs around the world where they want everyone vaccinated, then it's clear that the reaction is not in proportion to the problem as it stands, and therefore there's a reason they want that vaccine inside the global population. And it's because of a long-term plan to cull the population. They want to reduce the world population by a large number, a very large number of people, and to create other problems. And if people do only one thing to protect themselves and their family in the next few months, don't have the vaccine.
Now, we've talked about this again over the years as well, but for those that might be new to this conversation, who are the they that are planning these things?
Well, it's a very simple structure, and it has to be to work. If it was too complex, it would just fall apart. The background is that a network of bloodlines came out of the ancient world, particularly ancient Sumer and Babylon, which is now, of course, Iraq. They're not in Iraq for just for oil or just for control. There's many reasons they're in there. And one of them is that that area of land, Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers, is very, very important to them energetically and also in terms of historical reasons. And these bloodlines came in out of other parts of the world too, China and other areas of the world. But that area of Mesopotamia is very, very important for the people in control of the system, the global system today. They moved up into Europe. They became the European royal families and aristocracy. And then when the people began to reject overt control by dictatorship, royal dictatorship, they moved, although they still stayed there with the British royal family, the Spanish royal family, etc., and the aristocracy of Europe and Britain. But they overwhelmingly moved into what I call the dark superfessions, and they created, established, and took over business, banking, media ownership eventually when the media came along, control of governments, etc. And what they've created now, and this is how the spider's web works, if you think of the structure of a transnational corporation, you have the headquarters, and in this case it's in Europe, not the European governments, the center of the secret society web, but operational level is in Europe. It's in places like London, Paris, Rome, Berlin, particularly London and Rome, it seems. And this web of secret societies, which is what this web is, but it's structured exactly as a transnational corporation. You've got the headquarters in Europe, the center of the web, what I call the spider. And in every country, including Canada, every country, there is a network of these families which oversee a secret society network of exclusive, very secret, and semi-secret organizations. And their job is to control, in their sphere of influence, their country, that country's politics, business, banking, media ownership, military, pharmaceutical companies, etc. And so when the spider at the center of the web dictates the global policy, these subsidiary networks in each country then go to work to introduce that policy in their sphere of influence. And this is how the same changes take place in societies that are apparently unconnected all over the world about the same time, justified by the same excuses, and often even the legislation's worded the same. So that's how they control from a central point different countries. Now, this web, in terms of swine flu and the pharmaceuticals, this web will go into the pharmaceutical companies, what we call Big Pharma, will go into Baxter International. It will go into Novartis and all the rest of it. It will also, however, go into the public protection agencies of government, like the Centers for Disease Control in America, and it will go into the doctors' professional organizations, like the American Medical Association, the British Medical Association, and its Canadian equivalent. And it will go into the World Health Organization. You see, the idea is for a centralized global dictatorship. So anytime you see the word world in an organization, it's part of this operation, because they've created a series of world organizations to centralize power so they can dictate from a central point. So you have the World Bank, you have the World Trade Organization, and in relation to this swine flu conspiracy, you have the World Health Organization. And so the same force controls the World Health Organization, the Centers for Disease Control and their equivalent in different countries, and the pharmaceutical companies that are both creating the virus and the vaccine to meet the problem of the virus. So once you've stitched up the whole of this network, you've controlled the companies doing it, and you've controlled the regulators that should be stopping the companies doing it. You control the world body, the World Health Organization, which is the vehicle through which you bring this to a global pandemic and also to global vaccination campaigns. And this is what's happened. And they want access to the human body on a vast scale because they have something that they want to use to cause immense harm to humanity on a very large scale. And we must not allow that to happen by accepting these vaccinations because there's going to be tremendous pressure on them. What you're going to see, because it's a mind game in the end, you're going to have those that blindly, sheep-like, unquestioningly accept the vaccination for themselves and their children, putting pressure on those who resist because the authorities are going to be saying, well, yes, we've had large numbers of people vaccinated, but we still haven't got the herd protection that we need. We need a certain percentage of the population to have this herd